Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then, Friday is upon us. Last chance to get your licks in for the week, and I don't know, maybe for the coming week too, at least where this program is concerned. Little update program note, I will be off symposiuming in Kentucky this week, and if things work out, I will be, if things work out technically, I'll do a show every evening from my hotel room. If they don't, they don't, but if it's at all possible, I will do a show. So, you know, that, and that's Tuesday through Friday. So, you know, just check in. If it is, it is. If it's not, I'm sorry. But please understand that it is, that if I'm away from the microphone, it is for a darn good reason, because I generally have to be dragged away from this microphone kicking and screaming. But I expect to gain some significant and valuable knowledge while I'm gone, and again, I hope to be able to do a show just the same. Sorry there was no show last night. I went out to watch the boy in his first middle school football game, and I gotta tell you, I'm an emotional schmuck. I stood there watching the beginning of the game, and stood for the singing of the national anthem. Stood there on the verges of a football field that my father and mother literally helped build, and on which my 12-year-old son was about to play his first organized football game. And I had a lump in my throat about the size of a softball. I did. Because it was that whole intergenerational connectivity stuff, and I remember the conversations my father and I used to have about, well, we'll be going up to Morgantown to see the boy play for the Mountaineers someday. So, yeah, I was choked up. He didn't start, but he got in, and he got his licks in, and he played hard, and he worked up a good sweat, and I was as proud of him as any father can be of any son. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. And it seems that he's enjoying it, and that's what matters the most. You know, it is a fact that where school and school-age kids are concerned, the ones that are involved in some degree of athletics and extracurricular service, in addition to their scholastics, tend to have better grades and less likely to get in any form of trouble. You know, what did the psalmist say? Create in me, O Lord, a clean mind and a clean body. Yeah. So that's where I was. And since I wasn't on the air yesterday, I didn't get to wish a happy birthday to the boss. The boss's birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday, boss. And let's see. Let's start out. Well, there's a couple of things that I'd like to address, but I want to start out with a couple of emails. These are just a few of the emails that I received following Lorella Scarborough's phone call about the proposed beginning of blasting on Coal River Mountain next Wednesday. I should tell you that I had a subsequent phone conversation with Lorella. She told me that thus far, Governor Joe Manchin III has refused to give the citizens of the Coal River Valley so much as 5 minutes of his time to discuss giving them a chance to make the Coal River Wind Project a viable, promising reality by taking steps to hold up this obvious attempt to get the blasting started, because Massey Energy is scared to death of things like wind and solar power, because Don Blankenswine hasn't figured out a way to rape millions of dollars a year out of the wind and the sun yet. But thank you for your messages, and the many of them. This is just a few. Let's see. Our buddy Tom in California wrote, "Governor Manchin, I'm writing from California to urge you to use your power to stop the imminent destruction of Coal River Mountain and the surrounding communities. Instead of destroying the mountain for generations, you personally, sir, have the profound opportunity to promote long-term economic growth for your state. Clean, green jobs far in excess of those provided by mountaintop removal. And by supporting the Coal River Mountain Wind Project, you can make a heroic step toward national energy independence and national security. Wind power, not coal pollution. Be a hero. Stop the destruction of Coal River Mountain." That's from our buddy Tom. Let's see. Out in New Mexico, Rick applied fingers to keyboard and electrons to the internet. And Rick wrote, "Dear Governor, I would like you to consider the profound and permanent effects of the proposed mountaintop removal of Coal River Mountain, scheduled to begin next week. You might ask, why should someone from the land of enchantment, New Mexico, care what is done in West Virginia? Simply stated, we all share the limited resources of this earth, and to conduct such an approach to coal removal is not something that can be undone. Reclamation of a mountain destroyed by this form of mining is not feasible. Oh, sure, you can put a golf course there, but you'll only have a desert in the middle of an ecological oasis. We need to seriously think not only about ourselves, but we need to think about the next generations. We cannot act like there will not be people living on this great planet in 100 years, because if that is the way we think and act, then there will not be anyone living on this planet. Some things cannot be reversed. Please consider this and take every step and every initiative you can to halt this assault on nature's creation. We need the earth, the air, the clean water. The earth does not need us. Thanks for considering this request. Your decision does impact those of us out of your beautiful state. I love to visit West Virginia and would love to have those things that drew me there the first time. Call me back again." And this from our buddy Scott in Sweden. "Dear Governor Manchin, I'm writing you about the recent announcement to begin mountaintop removal operations on Coal River Mountain next Wednesday. It has come to our attention that there is an alternative proposal for a large-scale wind farm within easy reach of much of the central eastern seaboard of your country. We find this to be a very exciting wind project for green energy. Please take a look at some of the links below about large-scale wind farms here in Scandinavia and Europe. We hope that you will agree that this is a growth industry and one that West Virginia ought to try to get in early on, and that will create economic and employment opportunities far into the future and far outstripping what mountaintop removal can do. You have an opportunity with the Coal River Wind Farm to create real growth in renewable energy and the East Coast leader adjacent to a huge electrical market. Please consider the long-term growth potential here, but time is of the essence. The Appalachian Ridge is way too attractively sited for large-scale wind farms to remain untapped much longer, and such an opportunity will quickly go elsewhere, leaving West Virginia behind. Please delay initiating mountaintop removal operations on Coal River until you have thoroughly considered the greener option. I hope you find the links helpful." And Scott provides links to things like Sweden's SCA Norway's Statkraft in $2.4 billion wind power venture, wind farms in development in Scandinavia, offshore wind farm Lilligren, Sweden, increasing wind energy to bring economic benefits to Denmark, why wind power works for Denmark, Estonia, Paldiski Wind Farm, Finland, Wind Projects 2007, wind energy statistics in Finland, France, Suivi de production de l'éolien en France, Germany, wind energy in Germany, Hungary, new Hungarian wind farm on the border with Austria, Ireland, renewable electricity to 2010, Ireland to build world's largest wind farm, Latvia, wind energy in the BSR, country profile, Lithuania, Lithuanian Wind Energy Association, Poland, 1,000 megawatts to be installed in the next 3 years, Portugal, wind farms in Portugal, Spain, Spain's wind energy reaches new high, Spain's gain from wind power is plain to see, Russia, first Russian wind farm to be built in Kalmykia, Spanish power company to build wind farm in Russia, Eastern Europe, European Union Policy Directive, wind-generated electricity, list of Europe wind farms. The evidence is overwhelming, and thank you to everyone who sent an email to Governor Joe Manchin. Thank you. And if I may speak on their behalf, the residents of the Coal River Valley, thank you. So far, however, I must tell you that Joe Manchin, ostensibly a representative of all the people of West Virginia, has said that he does not have 5 minutes, people. He does not have 5 minutes between yesterday and Wednesday to listen to people whose homes are going to be destroyed, whose wells are going to be poisoned, whose lungs are going to be trashed, whose kidneys are going to be roasted, whose children's futures are going to be decimated. He does not have 5 minutes, 5 minutes out of his expected 70 on this earth. He does not have 5 minutes for the people in the Coal River Valley. Not 5 minutes. So, thank you. And please keep up the pressure. Feel free to keep sending emails. Tell him you've heard. Send another email. Say, Dear Governor Manchin. Not that I'm telling you what to say. Dear Governor Manchin, I was listening to Bob Kincaid the other night, and I found out that you don't have 5 minutes for the citizens of the Coal River Valley. You don't have 5 minutes. What's wrong with you, sir? You don't have 5 minutes for the future. You don't have 5 minutes for children and grandchildren. Governor Manchin, I heard you were pro-life. Are you not pro the lives of the folks in the Coal River Valley, Governor Manchin? Ask him. Be real sweet and nice and everything, but ask him. Because he is. He's pro-life. I mean, the West Virginia Family Association for Life and Little Fetuses and Blobs of Tissue Organization, they can't have a meeting that he will not beat a hot path to and get in there before they open the doors. Well, dang, Governor Joe, how'd you get here? I just wanted to be here for the pro-life meeting. Every fetus is sacred. But thank you. Thank you to Rick, thank you to Scott, thank you to Tom, and thank every one of you who emailed and called. And I hope you will find time to keep up pressure between now and Wednesday, because there is no more honorable task than to do so right now. Another little announcement, and one that it comes, this is just damn. You know, we had Mark Carlin on the program Wednesday night to talk about the BuzzFlash working class progressive conference that he had planned on BuzzFlash's behalf in Philadelphia. And if you heard that conversation, you know that it was an ambitious conference that really, really would have addressed significant issues in that realm, the progressive online community, reaching out to working class, labor-oriented folks, union organizations, labor organizations, reaching back out to the progressive online community. If you were listening to that conversation Wednesday night, you know that there was a heck of a lineup scheduled. You also know that we were going to stream the event online. Well, this morning, one of the first things that I saw in my email was a regretful note from Mark saying that that conference had been canceled. So I want you to know that I'm feeling a little snake bit. I was really looking forward to the horn being part of this, but it was apparently not to be. So the first thing that I want to say to you is that those of you who stepped up to make sure that we reached our goal of $1,000 for the trip, I've already made some contacts. I have not made all my contacts yet. But I will be sending out emails to ask you how you want your refund provided. And I feel really bad about this because this looked like a sure thing. And there was no way we could have gone and done this without your support. But it didn't happen. And so if you sent something specifically to fund the Philly trip, send me a note and tell me how you would prefer that your refund be accomplished. We can either send it back to you via snail mail or via PayPal. It's your choice. And again, I apologize. It wasn't my call. It wasn't my choice. And I certainly understand Mark's tough choice because you can't have all those people in a room talking to empty chairs. And that's just fact. On the other hand, I would like to suggest, and I did suggest this to Mark in a return email earlier today, I think this sort of highlights the problem, doesn't it? He planned and suggested this conference because he perceived that there is a divide, if you will, between working class folk, labor organization folk, and people in the online progressive community who usually don't put that much attention on labor issues. Guess what? Mark Carlin was correct. And I think that he is still going to try to bridge that gap, but he's going to try to do it in different ways, and I told him we would be happy to help in any way we can here at the Horn. But that gap is very, very real. And it proves to me the fact that, you know, there was available seating for 640 people in this room. And a lineup like what Mark had set up, coupled with the immediacy of the issues, suggested to me that this thing, I can't imagine. I figured there'd be an overflow crowd for something like this. Because this is a conversation that, apart from the horn, you know, we talk about that nexus a lot. We don't necessarily talk about it in terms of a nexus between, but we desperately try to intermingle environmental issues with labor issues, with women's rights issues, with gender equity issues, with human rights issues. We try to do that constantly. And it has been a drumbeat of mine over the years from the first moment I got back behind a microphone. You've probably heard it so many times that you can repeat it like a mantra by now. Democrats, progressives, liberals, otherwise known as decent people, will not be able to wage full-scale battle against the other side until we recognize that environmental issues are labor issues, and that labor issues are gender issues, and that gender issues are human rights issues, and that human rights issues are environmental issues, social justice issues, issues of basic fairness. It's all one thing, for the love of heaven. But from all indications, a lot of people don't recognize that. we keep the horn going, and more people will. You know, that's the upside. That's the good part. The bad part is that so many people haven't figured that out yet. And that there are so many people who are liberals, progressives, Democrats, otherwise known as decent people, that haven't heard of the horn, don't know what the horn does, don't know about the concept of conversation radio, that doesn't have an advertising axe to grind or a corporate axe to grind, where freedom of speech is the single most important operative element of the business philosophy. A lot of people don't know. But I sincerely want to thank folks like Aaron and Preston and Mara, who stepped up in a big way to make this conference possible for the Horn. And I apologize. I apologize for the fact that it was canceled. But again, I had no way of knowing. And the fact that it was has served as much of a learning experience to me, perhaps, as what I would have learned there. Because this is a great, big, howling, screaming, bright, blinding light in the sky that tells me how much we have yet to do. So there's that. Now, a couple of other things, just to get the evening started. As I was watching the conversation in the chat room before the show started, I saw a reference. I saw a reference to a church in Ohio. You know, there's a song out there called I Kissed a Girl. I heard it, and it's a cute little song. Song about a girl kissing a girl for the first time. It's gone away in the chat room screen, so I don't know. I don't have the particulars, but the message board. You know, all these churches have these message boards. And said I kissed a girl, and then I went to hell. And it's been very confusing to a lot of people because a lot of people out there think that you're supposed to kiss the girl, and that being, you know, and kissing the girl, and getting married, and having a, you know, marriage between one man and one woman, that is sure enough a way of keeping out of the hot place, because that is a sanctity ordained by Almighty God. But folks were confused because they hadn't heard the song. They didn't know it was about girls kissing girls. Yeah, I know. You know, it reminded me of something that Kate said to Peter one night on his show. She said, well, you know, it says in the Bible not to lie with a man, so I don't. It's kind of like that. But how delightfully astonishing that they would be confused by something like that. It's just precious. And then something else that is about as far away from the whole Palin, repig-licking convention, that cancer-faced, got a baby growing out of his head, old freak McCain, all of that. Something about as far away from that as you can possibly get. A news story that I found over on Chicken Noodle News. And frankly, it choked me up a little bit. Headline reads, oldest gorilla in captivity dies at 55. Again, oldest gorilla in captivity dies at 55. 55-year-old female gorilla named Jenny. And the AP story says the oldest gorilla in captivity, a 55-year-old female named Jenny, has died at the Dallas Zoo for her home for more than half a century, a spokesman said Friday. Lord, I love tortured journalism speak, but we'll save that for later. And then the second paragraph says, zoo officials decided to euthanize Jenny on Thursday night because of an inoperable tumor in her stomach. And suddenly I thought, I don't think that that headline is quite right. I'm thinking that headline needs to read, oldest gorilla in captivity killed at 55. Because that is what happened, isn't it? Oh, it was a mercy killing for sure. Because she had an inoperable tumor in her stomach, the story goes on to say that she had stopped eating and drinking recently. And tests showed that she was unlikely to recover. She was unlikely to cavort there in the gorilla pen at the Denver Zoo and help make the money. So they took her in a back room and they did the horizontal crucifixion thing on her and they killed her. I know. In a minute I'm going to start getting the emails all about how, well, you know, we do it to keep them from suffering, Bob. It's necessary. It's a humane thing. Sure. And the lobster's finest hour may happen in the pot, but he don't go there by choice. And really, when I looked at this story, and maybe you'll think I'm just halfway nuts, but when I looked at this story, I couldn't help thinking that this is the repig-licking approach to what a woman does with her body in a nutshell. Because you know what? If 55-year-old Jenny had decided to stop eating and stop drinking, and if gorillas in the wild usually live only to be about 35 years old instead of 55, odds are Jenny was taking care of it herself, wasn't she? She was exercising dominion and control over her own body by ceasing to drink and eat. Because after all, I don't think there is any debate left as to the sentience of a gorilla. They think. They process. They understand. And Jenny made a choice. She chose to stop drinking and eating. And stopping drinking and eating would have had natural and logical consequences. But instead, the folks at the Dallas Zoo made that choice for her. Now, they didn't make the choice for her. They took the choice away from her and killed her. Isn't that the right-wing, fundamentalist, fascistic, repig-licking approach to how a woman deals with her body? Isn't that the same thing? Well, honey, we know what's good for you, and you need to have that baby, even if you were raped, even if your brother jumped you and it's one of them uncle-daddy situations, even if that baby is going to kill you dead, we're going to make that choice for you. Because after all, the Joan of Snark, otherwise known as Sarah Palin, that beehive-headed woman with the voice like a butcher knife, she said that she's opposed to abortion even if it's in a case of rape or incest. Right? Right. So that woman doesn't have a choice, according to Sarah Palinolithic, the Sarahdactyl. She doesn't have a choice any more than Jenny the 55-year-old gorilla had a choice. She is, in point of fact, any woman in this country
of any age. Remember, this is not limited to childbearing age. This is about control of one's own body. Men in the audience, once they get abortion, the next thing they're coming after is your right to buy a little latex device to roll down over your John Thomas. Or your right to have a vasectomy. Remember, every sperm is sacred. All right? That's what we're dealing with here. So a human female in the United States, under the right wing and the Republican Party, has no more right than a captive gorilla in the Dallas Zoo. Where's the flaw? Is there any flaw in that reasoning? I don't think there's a flaw in that reasoning. Well, looks like she's having a pretty bad day. I think she's got a terrible hangnail there. I think we better shoot her, Bill. Jesus. And the Republican Party has every bit as much, or actually little, regard for an American female as the Dallas Zoo did for Jenny. It's just sad. It's just sad. What's wrong with letting nature take its course? You know, you got to remember that the Crisco John Ashcroft, that fundamentalist freak, back when he could have been trying to find some terrorists or something. No. He got himself all bent out of shape to go out to Oregon to tell them that Jesus wants you to suffer. You can't, you know, informed, examined, certified by a couple of different physicians that, you know, you're sick and you don't want it to go on anymore and you want to exercise a little bit of control over your existence and you've decided that you want to be the one who chooses when and how you go. John Ashcroft, by God, he didn't walk. He ran to Oregon to tell Oregonians that Jesus wants you to suffer with that cancer to the very bitter end. Right. Just is. No choices. It's not, guys, it's not just women. It's you too. And it's all kinds of choices. We're talking about fascism here, folks. We're talking about sure enough monsters. We're talking about some vicious people that shouldn't be left alone with a pile of a pile of moose poo, let alone be in charge of human lives. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is that me you're talking to?
I'm talking to you.
Hey, Kate. Is this request line?
Yeah, what do you want to hear?
Oh, I don't know, something wet and sad and bluesy. I don't know if this is a audio postcard or if it's a Mississippi update or if it's a Mad Max. God, the Coal River thing, that just segued right into the regular Friday Mad Max segment, didn't it?
Kind of did, didn't it?
Oh, God. What's happening? Where are they going to start digging again, blowing up again?
I don't know. Okay. It's a 200-acre corner of a massive proposed mining complex on top of Coal River Mountain that's slated for the blasting to begin this coming Wednesday. And you know what? They have no permit for a valley fill.
Yeah.
They said, well, we'll just truck the dirt away. Yeah, sure you will.
God. Oh, they could take it down and make levees and Mississippi. Well, I don't even know where this is going. I'm sitting up in Montana feeling kind of helpless, but I'm sitting on the Front Range and watching the sun come up in the morning, and it's too bad, you know, but I'm just feeling kind of out of control and kind of helpless. But there's no sense in, I keep dropping the phone, excuse me. There's no sense in me heading out down there now because it's too early. It's too hot to sleep in the truck, and, you know, so I'm just kind of hanging out here. And
well, is it a hopeless mess after the most recent storm, Gustav?
Yeah. I'm trying to clear the screen here, and I made some notes so I didn't have to ramble all over your stream, get the stream muddy, let's just wing it here and enjoy the feathers, okay? I spent the morning, yesterday morning, on the phone checking up with Bryce at WQRZ and with my friend over in Pascagoula to see, because she evacuated to Columbus like she always does, and she said we just didn't think we could handle the water. She has some limbs down and no water in her house, and she's down in Ocean Springs, and so she was pretty protected. They didn't even really get too Katrina'd because there's something about their elevation or where they're at on the bay or something. So she was, her house is okay. Bryce had to move his ham equipment, not the QRZ transmitter, but the ham equipment, all over to the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, and at the request of the EOC or the IOP, or I get they all look alike.
The ABC, the PDQ, the MIA.
All them white boys look alike. And so he moved his stuff over, and he was having volunteers help him, and one of the volunteers was sorting out all the paperwork for, like, membership for the contributors to the station and all that stuff, and all of his Katrina paperwork and his rebuild paperwork and applications and stuff, and whoever was doing the sorting didn't put them up on the couch, and so they all were on the floor, and his FEMA trailer got at the end of the dirt road where the radio station is, got 2 feet of water, and he lost all of that. Clothes, 50 pounds of dog food, that was probably the worst, made the worst mess. He, when I talked to him, he was just mucking out his trailer yesterday morning. But the EOC, the county, and the state government have dropped the ball so bad that I...
Well, you know, when you're down there amongst the repig lickens, okay, dropping the ball, governmentally speaking, is what they do best.
Well,
because, you know, they're trying to prove to us that government is ineffectual and hopeless and we really shouldn't have anything. It should just be drowned in a bathtub.
Yeah.
And they're doing everything in their power to prove that.
As I was putting out the feelers for where am I going to park and what am I going to do this winter, I told one woman, no, I can't do that. I can't go back to Hancock County. I know too much, and I would not be effective. I would be totally ineffective and disruptive, and I can't sit in a room and watch people lie. And, you know, like, I know what you did, boy, and I ain't gonna, and then what was going on this winter, this time with the storm, I'm not even gonna talk about it because I know too much, and I don't want to even get into that kind of crap. But anyway, the surge, just going down the notes here, the surge went in about 11 miles at Waveland and Bay St. Louis. And for some reason, it was a real freak thing. The storm, they got a lot of wind damage, of course, but the water flowed into the bay, and then it hung there for some reason. And so a lot of, like, anybody who knows the area, the post office in the kiln had water in it, and that's way up, like 10 miles. It's way on north of 90, and that's not in the flood zone. So the people who aren't in the flood zone got it again. And another thing that was really like the natural causes, the surge went in and it held for so long that the neutrinos couldn't escape. And so all the little rodents that are singing out in the bayou drowned. And when the surge went out, they're all laying on the beach where they don't even go close to, you know. It's kind of an odd, you know, usually those animals can move up land, upland, they're getting trees, and, you know, they escape. But this time he said there are thousands of them out on dead along the beach, and it's really a pretty sad looking thing. But anyway, on Monday morning, his weather bug went down at 7 a.m. He was standing there looking at it while he was talking to me. He said, yep, 7 a.m. And then on Tuesday, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he and two volunteers waded out in calf-deep water back to the property. I mean, they could get in on the road, but then down his road, they had to wade back in, and he got it back up on the air. And yesterday, around when I was talking to him, he said he's been watching the counter or whatever you call it. You guys know what I'm talking about. He had over 450 people streaming, and Hancock County's empty. So, so these people were all out and about and streaming. So he said, because the locals his transmitter shed had water in it too.
And oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, one of the power strips was down on the floor, and it was smoking when he got there, and he said, I got there just in time.
Yeah, by smoking, we don't mean doing a really good job.
No, it was doing
it was having that fun interaction that happens between water and active electricity.
It was fitting to do a better job there. He lost 4 changers out of 6, and so, and he had worked for months and months and months setting them all up with music, and oh God, he had thousands of tunes, you know, for each day was a different genre and stuff, but he lost 4 of those changers, and some computers and a whole bunch of equipment in his storage shed, and everything in the FEMA camper that was 2 feet below water, you know. So okay, so what makes it so sad is that most everyone in Hancock County who was living in temporary housing, like a MEMA cottage by the Mississippi Emergency Management,
right,
or the FEMA campers or the FEMA trailers, were all ADA. None of those domiciles will be replaced. None of them.
So what is it? It's just permanent camping vacation now?
And no one is, he got, the people who are, how'd this go? So, like, if it was totally, the MEMA cottages, people were given those, or they were allotted those with a 2-year option to buy. And so, if you lost, and they just floated away. And if you lost the MEMA cottage, that's it. Nothing. You know,
well, I know you've been disconnected for a while and everything, Kate, but that's something I couldn't help thinking about and mentioning as the storm approached. Namely, those trailers and so forth, you know, when New Orleans flooded and folks were in attics and rooftops and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
they were in the attics and rooftops of buildings that were at least attached to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA trailers and the likes. Float.
They floated, yeah.
And they wash away, and they tip on their side. I mean, you know, they don't have, literally speaking, even keels.
No, they didn't. They, yeah. When I talked to my friend on her way, she called me to say, "Well, Kate, I'm on my way to Columbus. I just figured I can't, and I just heard MEMA cottages are floating, and you know." And I said, "Oh, Jesus!" So, I was staying in pretty close touch to people, and I don't know about fatalities yet or injuries, but I just know that it's very sad because the people, there's like 3 tiers of problems. The people who were in the process of rebuild or have the paperwork handed out that way and were living in FEMA campers, they will get their FEMA is, designated by law to do the safety and security and sanitation thing. And so they're, you know, Bryce has been put up in a motel now because his trailer is unrecoverable and they won't replace it. And so then the next layer of people are the MEMA cottages, are the people who...
So does this mean for all intents and purposes that Bryce's radio operation is in profound jeopardy?
Yeah. And the reason oh, I said I wasn't going to get into this. He's not getting any support or any funding from the Chamber of Commerce, the County of Hancock, the State of Mississippi, the government of the U.S.
Want to know why?
And he's a critic. Yeah, because he's a pain in the ass.
Well, because he is, if we were having the genteel conversation, we would say that he was uncontrollable.
Yeah, he's absolutely uncontrollable. There, just as an aside, there's some information. I couldn't find it before I went on air today, but there's a segment of with someone from WLOX, the TV station, that came out and talked to him, and I was looking for it, but there's a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know how much media coverage this is getting nationally. I don't think any.
That would be zero.
Okay. So that's why I felt just compelled to make this pile of notes and call in and apprise people what's going on, because it's pretty sad. And I know we have disaster fatigue, but suck it up. You know, I'm just going to keep talking until I get...
No, wait just a minute, Kate.
What?
Okay.
What?
I don't think we have disaster fatigue.
What?
We have fatigue, but it's not disaster fatigue. It's a fatigue that is, and maybe I'm just playing semantics here, but I think there's a distinct difference. This is not a distinction without a difference. It's not disaster fatigue, it's incompetence fatigue. No matter how much the American people give, no matter how hard the American people work, no matter how many Kates there are who get in trucks and vans and buses or what have you and go to work on the Mississippi Gulf Coast or go to work in New Orleans, they are like the Jonathan Swift quote that I mentioned a couple of nights ago. They are opposed by a confederacy of dunces.
Oh, yeah.
And those dunces come straight out of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and the church.
Really? I mean, we know where the Bush administration screw-ups are. I'll leave it to you to speak to, I mean, what are the churches doing or not doing?
Nothing.
Okay, they're doing nothing and they're doing it poorly?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it really well. This is the shorthand, the short version of that. One of those years I was down there, I said to the grandma, well, honey, what church do you belong to? Oh, I said, well, haven't they given you any help? Because she was in dire need. Haven't they given you any help? She said, oh, I wouldn't ask them, because they just all just gossip and they just, you know, they just treat you like you're just, you know, I mean, I know that was a lot of her stuff too, but I happened to have heard that a lot from a lot of people. And she said, I said, well, they got a lot of money because they helped, they did the this and the that. She said, I know, but they wouldn't give it to any of us.
God almighty.
So, and FEMA, I was told by more than one person who were volunteers that FEMA had told the Methodist Church, who really do a good job. I mean, oh, my God, if it weren't for the Presbyterian Disaster Relief, a PDA, and if it weren't for the Methodists, their UMCOR, United Methodist something, if it weren't for and Catholic diocese, if it weren't for them, I mean, we'd just be in a big mess. So, but it's like the local churches who have very little power and a whole lot of money, and they wield that very little power with great big old, you know, whatever they have.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
Anyway, so anyhow,
they wield it with an iron cross. Let's put it that way.
That's so genteel. Okay. So
I specialize in that.
It's your radio station. The county and the state and the feds aren't. Especially the county and the state are just really. Hancock County was probably politically one of the biggest messes, and so I guess that's as far as I want to go with that. So that leaves people with who are differently abled just totally out in the cold. I mean, there's just no help. And with Bryce's radio station, the Chamber of Commerce, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, wanted, they were over EOC before they all left, you know, to go back to their respective domiciles, and he wanted Bryce to go on air and tell people it's okay to come back. And Bryce was not genteel. said, I'm not going to do that because...
And was he being less polite?
Oh, yeah. And he just, I said, Connie, if you could just be more collaborative and if you could negotiate. And he said, ungenteel. Kate, I'm not there. I'm just not there. So...
What makes me think that the quote was something radically different than that?
Yeah.
Kate, I ain't gonna do that.
Bryce,
no
Bryce,
way.
Bryce, focus. Listen to me talking. Okay, Bryce.
With the little two fingers to your eyes and the little two fingers to his eyes and back to your.
Yeah.
Focus. Do you see what I'm doing with my fingers?
Screaming
here?
At each other. I'm in the Burger King parking lot and he's standing in 2 feet of dog food, wet dog food. And I'm screaming, focus. It's my freaking minutes.
Oh, you know, shame on me for having a smile on my face. But, you know, I love somebody that don't want to focus under those circumstances. I just do.
Oh, I know. That's what I do. One of the things that happened, I'm changing the subject, I think, because I'm getting far afield here. One of the things that the guard came in and set up an ice and water pod after the storm blew over, and it was like there for like 12 or 14, 18 hours or a day or something, and then they left. And I said, what? Why? And he said, because there's nobody in the county. They all evacuated, you know, the ones who could.
Right.
And so they just took that down. One of the shelters was completely full in Hancock County, and the other one, over east, in the east part of the county, was closed up because nobody was using it. So they closed that particular shelter. But the fact that the water surged in and stayed there did a lot of damage.
And see, I can't. I mean, we talked about competence and negligence a minute ago, Kate. I got to go back to something, and I don't want the emails about, oh well, you know, I didn't like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton looked at what the hurricanes had done under Poppy Bush's administration.
Mm-hmm.
And among the first things that Bill Clinton did when he got into office was to elevate the director of FEMA to a cabinet-level post. That meant that the director of FEMA as a result of a natural or man-made disaster anywhere in America had direct access to the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And could get authority, could get, you know, you just go ahead and do that, and I'll sign the checks, and, you know, I'll sign the orders. You just get her done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing, you know, much as Ronald Reagan, one of his first acts in office was the removal of the solar panels from the White House, one of the first things that dumb leader did, dear dumb leader, one of the first things he did was to take FEMA back out of the cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, there's no forgiveness for that.
No.
Don't ask me. I ain't going to try.
Mm-mm.
Because,
no,
you know, we've mentioned it from time to time, but it is worth noting, or, you know, put it on a wall or something, that forgiveness requires the precondition of contrition.
Mm-hmm.
The precondition of contrition.
At least amending behavior.
Yeah. You know, you got no right to call on me for forgiveness until such time as you have given some indication that you're sorry in the first place. I mean, I know that, you know, on a broader scope, there are people out there in liberal land who say, well, you know, we can't be mean to the right wingers. We need to come together and heal the divisions in this country.
Don't even go there with me. Don't even leave an opening. Don't drop that line on me, because I'll take it and run with it. This is not the day to do that.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie. Well, I haven't heard from you in forever, but there's something about you, Kate, that makes phone lines light up. And I mean to tell you, all six of them are jacked to the wall right now.
Well, okay, then let me finish my stack so we can hear the rest of the people talking. And another thing remind me to get back to this. Why do they live there? Oh, well, anyway, but at LOX, through the interview, the guy said, Bryce, why do you do this? This is your third time. Why do you do this? And Bryce said, because I'm just helping the people. That's what I do. I'm giving power to people who aren't otherwise empowered. And this time, they all got out, most of them. And he said, what else would I be doing? What else would I be doing? So, and another thing he's been doing is that he said he's working with the Coast Electric because in the FEMA campers, I don't know about the trailers, I expect it's probably the same thing. He was so happy he went jogging into the trailer and he was gonna, and the power is on and stuff, and he realized, oh my God, the breaker box is on the floor. Oh dear. And that's one of the big bones of contention that some people have been having with the Coast Electric, that they want to come out and hook up people and make sure they're safe and they know how to do it and all that stuff. And they need an appointment to get hooked up and all that. And then some fellow down there is saying, just screaming and jumping up and down on Sarge's show and going on and on about the Coast Electric. And Bryce called her, the community PI person, and said, please, if people just can't go into their trailers with 2 feet of water and the breaker box is on the floor. Because FEMA's responsible for safety and security and sanitation, and, that ain't none of that. None of that's happening lately. So I just thought that was another little design flaw in the whole temporary housing thing. But Bryce refused to ask people to come back because they but everything was closed and there was even water and business.
Well, what are you coming back to, for the love of Mike?
Well, the chamber, that people can come back and support the chamber with money.
And go to the what? The casinos?
Yeah, Bryce is in a motel room. He has some food allergies, and he's in a motel room and they're catering food for him. And he said, how can you do that? You don't even know what I eat. And don't do that. I mean, I don't eat anything when I'm busy, so don't bring me food. And besides, I have a microwave, so he has to unplug something to plug the microwave in to heat the sandwich. And so he has...
Damn, this is not America. No, America doesn't have these... You understand what I'm saying? This ain't supposed... This sounds like freaking Baghdad.
Well...
And you know what? It is. It's Baghdad on the damn bayou.
Is that a song?
David,
get some lyrics on that.
What those dumb bastards did in Baghdad, they fully and intentionally meant to replicate all across this country, whether it's a collapsing bridge in Minneapolis or a flooded Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or Southern California burnt to a cinder, or another hurricane bearing down on Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's all Baghdad. Screw Chinatown, Jake. Forget about it, Jake. It's Baghdad.
We got something going here. Write some lyrics. Get a music band on that. Another thing that's very weird. I mean, not weird. It's not even.
I'm the title guy. I'm only good for parody lyrics.
Oh well, don't. Okay. People who Bryce and others who had experience with Katrina, who their beds were due up on the first, second, third, fourth, of the month, and so they go and get their meds, on their Medicaid or whatever, or Medicare, whatever their ADA, whatever they're covered by, and he had his and other people's Katrina experience was that the pharmacies blew down before they could get the meds, and so he and other people had to go at least like 6 weeks without medication.
It's moments like this, Kate, that I'm just glad that we haven't gotten around to building the full-size studio yet, because there ain't no room for me to run in, because by now we'd be having the whole Doppler effect thing of me just running around the studio screaming.
Well, and so he went to the pharmacy, his regular pharmacy, to his regular guy, they're really cool, and he's a contributing member to QRZ. He went to get his meds 2 days early, so he'd be stocked up for the storm, and in case this was a big one, and Medicaid, Medicare, that other thing, Meta something, wouldn't pay for it, so Bryce had to lay out $225. And because he didn't go like he did 6 weeks without during Katrina. So not only all of the temporary units in Hancock County, most all of them were ADA units, and so those people on three different levels of oh my God are totally screwed. And as of he wasn't sure about this, but as of yesterday morning, he wasn't sure, but what there had been no presidential directive that the coast had not been declared a disaster area. And so FEMA is, like, not responsible.
But that was supposed to have been pre-done this time through. I saw the news story. Oh, God.
Okay, well, I don't know about that.
No. I'm not challenging what you said. I'm challenging what the for-profit media reported.
I'm just saying I don't know that that report was accurate, so I'm just saying there's a rider there that I'm not sure that there was no presidential directive. Okay, moving over eastward to Jackson County, this hurts my heart, and it just makes me want to throw my dress up over my head. I'm going to have to start wearing dresses, aren't I? Okay. The agencies over there have been given the task to go to Baton Rouge to train case managers because Baton Rouge got hammered big time, and there's no agencies prepared up there to handle the onslaught of unmet needs. I'm speaking particularly of elderly, disabled, and single parents. And so there's nobody up there prepared to deal with that because they're not in hurricane country. Well, they got blown away. And so they're taking case managers from some of the agencies to send them up to Baton Rouge to train case managers to handle all those unmet needs and get the paperwork started and whatnot. And I don't know, I guess they're going to do paperwork through FEMA. I don't know anything about it except that Baton Rouge has just got caught short. And FEMA down in Pascagoula, Ocean Shores, Biloxi, all across Hancock, Harris, and Jackson County, FEMA has taken over case management on the coast. They co-opted the agencies. Now those agencies are starting the process of telling people that there is nowhere on the coast that you can live for $600 a month on your Social Security. There is no place for you to live.
You need to get your broke ass up and get out. It's what the bartender says at 3 a.m. You ain't got to go home, but you got to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And these people have no help, no trailers, no apartments, no place to live, and all of my colleagues are given the task of reshuffling the cases and telling these people that there is nowhere for you to live on the coast for $600 a month.
So is this rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic?
I reckon. I tell you what, thank you for your perspective on Jenny. When you started telling that story, I said, yeah, dang, yeah, let her go, God almighty. So that's kind of how I feel about this. I guess part of what I do.
Don't want her sneaking off and dying natural on her own or nothing.
No. And I guess, like, I often tell people that when there's hopelessness and despair and nobody has any thing to live for, the best thing I can do is just, you know, tell them, hey, you know, you're right. And if you want to commit suicide, you have my blessing because, you're right. You have nothing to live for. You have nowhere to go, nothing, except to maybe cook me a pot of black-eyed peas before you leave, and that perks her right up. Back to the black-eyed pea story. But that's,
Hold out till you get the collards with them.
Oh, I have to take the greens and the dead pig to her. I left the peas with her, and so I'm going back, and she's going to cook for me when I get back there. But anyway, I see I'm way past the top of the hour. So what I wanted to you were talking about pro-life and I'm not sure. I'm probably just talking way off of my head here. But it seems to me like that down there in that, this is my little kicker, and then I'm out of here. Down in that pro-life belt, you know, where everything is so precious, down below the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, that's just darling.
Yeah, ain't that sweet? We're killing more disabled and elderly people than we are having legal abortions.
There is that.
So I'm out of here. Thanks for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, I got plenty of Java and Chesterfield Kings.
Oh, hell yes. I think I'm going to head to the truck and have a big old cup of coffee. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Kate. Bye. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Kate's been way too silent for way too long. She's been having problems with a recalcitrant computer. Awfully good to hear from her, though. Let's keep things rolling. You guys have got it stacked up. Oh, you bailed. All right, here we go. Let's try again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey to you. It's Reverbo, my friend.
Hey, Reverbo, what's going on, man?
I don't know. This week has just been madness from start to finish. You don't even know where to begin. I feel so bad about what's happening with that whole Coal River thing up in West Virginia.
Well, it's coal. It's what's happening on Coal River. It's what's happening on the Gulf Coast. This Reverbo, this is a sick, 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 sick country. And I don't mean sick as in twisted and perverted, because, well, you know, where the right wing's concerned, it's that, too. But, I mean, this is a gravely, physically, mentally, spiritually ill nation.
Oh, you're singing to the choir here. I was trying to find something to lighten things up here on a Friday. Well, I thought of one thing, man. Where's your new sound effects toy with the crash cymbals and everything? What happened to that?
This? Yeah, that.
Yeah, well, okay. Where'd that go?
ain't had much use for it lately, frankly.
I guess not. I don't even know. It is sick. It's ill. The environmentalists talk about the earth like this now, and the whole global warming thing. It's like there's an infection here. And, you look at these freaks who had their convention this week. None of those people think anything's wrong.
No. All those pasty-faced, doughy white people in Minneapolis, the only thing that they think is wrong is that, you know, that fella, you know, him, the dark one, might get to be president. That's the only thing wrong with America. We can bomb our way to prosperity and we can...
Screw our
way to chastity, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the Republican Party, your bridge to the 12th century.
Ain't it the truth?
It ain't the truth.
That's why I call her Sarah Palin-olithic.
Of course, this woman believes that the Flintstones are a documentary. Now, I don't know what happens to people when they get like this, but I don't know if there's a vaccine for this. I don't know how you combat this. Someone was talking on the radio today about some screwball idea that they're having that McCain doesn't even count, that he's a Trojan horse, and they're trying to get finally the totally extreme they've always wanted in there.
Look, I mean, you know, McCain's so cancered up, Reverbo, he's going to grow a baby's arm out of his head one of these days.
He is.
Half of his face is going to slide off, and he's going to have to live down in the sewer like that old TV show. What was it, Beauty and the Beast?
You hate to make fun of the way people look, but I'll tell you, I went and saw a documentary I've been wanting to see. By the way, in a couple of hours, Hurricane Hannah is going to descend on Wilmington, North Carolina, which is where I am calling you from, so we got that going
for
us.
Oh, crap!
I know, and then Hurricane Ike after that.
Well, there's some hope for Ike, because I saw a plotting for hurricanes that start where Ike started.
Yeah.
And they all tend to get kind of close, but from 1898 to the present, only two have made landfall. One of those was in the extreme of New England, and one did this sort of like a teenager doing a donut on a lawn did that on Florida.
Well,
but that's it's like 13 hurricanes or something, and they all just go, you know. It's like, you know when you walk when you're walking by and you see somebody you think you know, and you go to wave and you realize it's not them, and you go ahead and scratch your head. It's like that.
I think you're right.
I do too. I did. But then again, you know, who was that? There was some Democrat, maybe from South Carolina,
who was, you know, the Republicans. The Republicans came out, and Reverbo, they were shocked. They were dismayed. They were disgusted. They couldn't believe that someone would truck and make jokes on the backs of the suffering like that when he said, you know, it kind of looks to me like maybe God's having a little judgment on the Republicans, what with Gustav and the convention and everything. And, you know, they had their fit. But you know what? Some of this stuff is somebody's trying to drive me into religion. That's what it's, because the way that the karma or the hubris is being punished, it's hard not to look up and go, wow, this all sort of fits, don't it?
Well, wasn't there that preacher man who was kind of hoping for a storm to descend on Denver? You know?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it did.
I mean, yeah, I, you know, it must be nice to have that direct line to the great one upstairs. I don't know, but it seems to be. I agree. Things are very strange with these. It's going to be raining. Yeah, cats and dogs living together and all of that pretty soon.
And I can't help thinking about the immortal words of one Hunter S. Thompson.
I was just going there
when he said, "Big darkness soon come, and they will travel on a road of bones."
Well, how much do you miss the Good Doctor right now?
I don't know. I don't know if a day goes by that I don't think, you know, damn, Doc, couldn't you have waited? I mean, I acknowledge it was his right to do what he did.
Sure.
But, you know, there's a couple of people out there that we really need right now because we don't have their replacement yet. One of them's Hunter Thompson, and the other one's Molly Ivins.
I'd say a third one's Frank Zappa.
Well, yeah, Frank Zappa.
but
golly Moses!
I'm glad you mentioned Thompson because I was going to say that I went and saw that documentary about his life this week. I think it's called Gonzo: The Life and Times of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, and it was hard to watch some of that without thinking of what is exactly happening now. And of course, they made those comparisons rather evident in the documentary as well. But, man, oh, man, they were showing some footage of that Democratic convention in 68, and I almost couldn't even watch it. I mean, those people were just getting their heads beat in.
Yeah, and that,
just,
yeah, that wasn't...
With them.
And those people were not rioting. The police are the ones who rioted. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
Looking a hell of a lot like the same thing happened in Minneapolis. Dear God, I mean, you know, what I said to Kate a couple of minutes ago is abundantly true, and more so the more I think about it. About them wanting to create Baghdad on the bayou? What the hell was Minneapolis if it wasn't the total blackwaterization of, how many journalists have had open season declared on them in Iraq? We're not talking about the journalists getting blown away by the Mahdi army or by, you know, some crazed dynamite belt wearing person. We're talking about people getting dusted off by the United States military or by the mercenaries that you and I pay for. Now apart from the fact that they weren't openly murdering them, what the hell's the difference in Minneapolis? I mean, just asking.
There's no difference. It's war, and the war is on our own shores. And people just got to realize that there is no alternative. It's Obama, or it's 1,000 years of eternal pain.
You know, I said yesterday, Reverbo, that I took time to go to my son's football game, and you always have little moments outside. Anytime you go to do something specific, there are going to be moments ancillary to it that are going to provide teaching moments for you.
Mm-hmm.
And as traffic was thick, and it's a very small area, and there's virtually nowhere to park. And a couple of guys came by in a vehicle, and they hollered out the window and said, "What's the score?" And the guy didn't know. I walked around, told him the score, and I looked in, and I see the driver's wearing an Obama T-shirt. He's an African American. He was from the other team. And I looked at him, you know, I said, and I told him what the score was, and he kind of smiled. And I said, "You're on the other team right now, but I can tell from that T-shirt that you and me, we're on the same team. We're going to get them."
It has to be done.
The fun part was the look on his face looking at my cracker ass in West Virginia going, and he looks at it. Did he just say what I did? Really?
No, I've been volunteering for them since the primary down here, and I have discovered that. I just moved out here from Colorado, kind of, and it really is true that it seems like Obama has his message of everybody, we've just got to get over it, whatever it is, and work together.
Well, I love his response.
And it works. I'm telling you, Bobby, I've noticed it. It really does work. People are down with this guy.
I have seen the first segment that Bill O'Reilly ran of his conversation with Obama, and I was not real happy about it.
No.
But I was impressed, on the other hand, with the response that he gave to somebody who wanted him to talk about, well, what did you think when Sarah Palin demeaned what you did as a community organizer? And he gave a brief answer, but then he said, one of these days we're actually going to have to get past this crap and start talking about stuff that matters. And I think that's the single seminal line that comes out of his acceptance speech. The Republicans will try to turn this into an election. What was it? Small issues in big times or something like that. And it's absolutely.
And he is trying to get
past it.
All they've got. Well, what do they have? They can't run on the war. They can't run on the economy. They can't run on anything that's good for people. They can't run on energy. They got nothing except what they always have, which is, matter of fact, I sort of drifted onto this to you earlier in the week about how that is all they ever have. It's like literally like the bully in the fourth grade. All they've got is, you're ugly. That's what they've got. It's too complicated for you to understand. Just leave it to us. And for sure, you don't want the black guy in charge. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a breaking story now, Reverbo. I don't know if you've seen this yet or not. Our news ninja Gene sent this to me, and our listener Dennis sent this to me. And it's horrifying stuff. Apparently, in Alaska, everybody knows everybody. All right? I was talking to another listener earlier in the day, and he said, listen. He said, Alaska doesn't have the largest state landmass-wise in the United States doesn't have the population of Davidson County, Tennessee. Okay? And he said, she ain't governor of much. But, so it's small, and everybody there knows everybody else, right?
Okay.
So there's this waitress who waits on Sarah Palin at the little restaurant every once in a while. Her name is Lucille. And she, she waits on the governor's table, and there she's all sitting there with five or six other vile, filthy repiglickins. And she was waiting table, Reverbo, the day that it had been announced that Hillary was leaving the race. And Lucille's sitting there, and she's filling the coffee mugs and taking orders. And somebody tells Sarah Palin that, and Sarah Palin's response is, "So, Sambo beat the bitch."
Why am I not surprised at this?
Well, and see, this is what I've been saying for months now. Not that anybody's been disagreeing with me, but, I just feel compelled to reinforce this. This is going to get really vile and ugly and filthy and nasty and vitriolic and poisonous. Because, last night it was the story of this Lynn Westmoreland creep from Georgia. Again, doughy, pasty-faced, white guy. Who's giving an interview to a guy, with the notepad and the pen and the microphone going. And he was asked for his impression of Barack Obama. And his answer, Reverbo, was, I'd say that he comes across as uppity.
Yeah.
And then the reporter goes, did you really just say uppity?
Yeah.
Do you really want to use that? And he goes, yeah, I'd say that's what he is. He uppity. So Sambo beat the bitch. And by the way, Sarah Palin, they've touted the fact that her husband has some amount of genealogy that is related to the first persons. We used to call them Eskimos. We call them Inuit now. You know what Sarah Palin calls them?
I give up. What?
Arctic Arabs.
Well, that's pretty humorous, huh?
Dang, that's funny. I don't care who you are.
She also calls
them, and this is one of those little Timmy, little Susie moments. Mom, Dad, get them out of the room. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. She also just calls them fucking Eskimos.
And our friends in Alaska are happy with Sarah. Is that what?
Even the waitress says, "That's just Alaska."
Oh sure, it's just business. It's just politics. It's just Sarah.
Yeah, forget about it, Jake. It's Baghdad.
Well, there you go. I heard this guy, what's his name? It was Westmoreland or something. It had some name that reminded me of someone else I disliked.
Somebody else that you disliked intensely, the general from Vietnam, William Westmoreland.
Yeah, some of these guys are like carpet bombing people.
Yeah, the guy who stood up in front of the microphones and said, well, you know, the problem here that you don't understand is that these Vietnamese people, they don't value life the way we do.
Not the way we know it, no. Yeah, it's so funny that you're just tears come out, and we haven't been anywhere. It's still the 60s. It's still the hard hats against the freaks. It's still that way because that's the way they want it. It's clearly the way they want it. Yeah, this is a very amusing thing that's happening. Picture this in your mind, this PR move. McCain and Palin, the change team, they are stealing, they're going to try to steal the change brand from Obama and company. I mean, it's just almost unbelievable.
Well, there has been an announcement out from the RNC, though, Reverbo. She will not be answering any off-the-cuff questions. She will not be speaking to reporters. She will not be seen saying anything that is not completely scripted, and ain't nobody going to have access to her unless she's behind a microphone with a pre-written speech, and there will be no questions after.
I am kind of thinking that the press, this may be actually what the press needs to realize that they have some balls, that maybe they are going to decide, maybe, that they're not going to be the PR arm of these people, but actually they're going to possibly do their job, do you think?
Not a prayer. What this is a warning. This is the political equivalent of putting a horse's head in David Gregory's bed. This is just to let them know that if they want the access, they're going to do the dance.
Well, somebody's got it. Well, Mr. Olbermann isn't. I've read a few things on some blogs that, at least on the surface, press might not be kowtowing to this.
Not be quite so servile, right? But they're trying to get a message out right now that if we win, you're screwed. You better tighten up, because the Straight Talk Express is talking to y'all for-profit media.
Well, yeah, climb on the change train. I just can't get enough of that. I just hope that there are...
Sarah Palin pulling the change train.
Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, I'm going to catch hell for that.
Oh, man. First, let's laugh about it, then catch hell. This is where you need your crash symbol. I just can't believe that there are enough moronic, undecided voters who are going to buy into this. I mean, it's just not.
Then you need to stay listening this evening after this program ends. I don't want to give anything away, but I know that Peter Godbold with Strictly Confidential is all set up to let you hear those people that are excited about Sarah Palin. And to the same extent that every single person I asked about Barack Obama who said, you know, I heard he's Muslim, every single person, 100% of those informally surveyed by yours truly, Bob Kincaid, prior to the West Virginia primary, every last one of them, I said, where did you hear that bit of craziness? They said, in church. Well, guess what? There is not a fundamentalist, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking, strychnine-drinking, snake handling church in America that is not going to be positively awash in holy sweat and spit this Sunday morning, talking about the fact that Jesus has sent us Sarah Palin, and there are, and those people exist in their millions.
And don't forget Possum Goddess worshiping.
Yeah, Possum Goddess. No, I'm Possum Goddess worshiper.
What, you know, it would be fun. I don't know. Call me crazy, but how about let's, like, maybe ask to see all these churches in, I don't know, our office next week and talk about that, that property tax exemption.
No, let's talk about that whole 501c3 exemption.
I think that'd be totally appropriate.
But see, they also understand that they had better, by God, get John McCain and Sarah Palin into office, or somebody might actually send a little post-it note on a letter over to the IRS saying, "Why don't you have a look at these rotten charlatans' tax-exempt activities?" They have a vested interest. It ain't just the little fetuses and just the little snowflake babies. It is their bank accounts, and trust me, they care about that a whole lot more than they do any snowflake baby.
Oh, yeah, of course they do. It's corrupt from top to bottom. It's when the religion, when you're politically connected because of your religion in a country like the United States, man, oh man, are we in the deep water? I mean, I don't envy anybody who's going to be president for the next 20 years. There's so much work to do. And, oh, one real quick thing about Hunter Thompson. You know that British artist that they always paired him with?
Oh, Ralph Steadman, sure.
Well, you remember how he drew these people with the, they had like 9 chins and they were bloated and they looked like they just...
They looked like the inside of Pink Floyd's The Wall. I don't know, but what, yeah, Ralph, like, Steadman did them too.
Like you just dipped them in a volcano real briefly and pulled them out. I don't know. Did everybody at that convention kind of look like that? And did the John McCain kind of look like that?
You know, I love that one photo of the convention with a big red circle. Did you see this, Reverbo? Photo of the convention from the stage looking out. A big red circle drawn around the single African American in the room. And it just the, and somebody wrote on the photo in China marker, "Found him!"
Yeah, they have. They're at the, one of their lowest ratios of minorities.
But the funny thing is, this guy has his own celebrity status now because the pool cameras cut away to this guy about a half a million dozen times. I mean, every time they need, you know, granted, there'd be Granny with her stupid plastic hat on or some idiotic polyester-wearing pasty-faced doughy white guy clapping out of time to the bad music. And then me, and then, it, but it, you know, like every fourth cutaway was to this one guy.
Well, did he appear to be one of them?
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I don't know, maybe he was paid to be there or something, but if he was an actor, he was in character, you know, he was in rapt attention and smiling occasionally. If I was him, I'd be thinking, you know, no sudden moves. These people, I don't care if I show them my Republican registration card, they will kill me.
They're not doing particularly well with the minority voters.
Well, that's the thing. The Democratic Convention looked like America looks.
Pretty much, yeah.
The Republican Convention looked like America looked back when they imagined America as an America where all the white men got one vote and the women got none, and the African-American people were considered three-fifths of a human being. That's what that convention looked like. It was everything but frock coats and top hats.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I imagine they're still a little bit upset that they got to let the women folk in.
I was just going to say, we're not too far removed from that. I'm sure that if there's a way to appeal a whole lot of progressive laws and ideas, they'd figure out a way to do it. Which is, and again, it's too bad. It reminds me of this whole, we can bring the thing all the way back to your Coal River outrage, where, and that guy you were talking to, and now his whole seminar, his whole convention is canceled
which I suppose maybe we could get some more information about that. I don't know what happened. Why did it get...
Just wasn't enough registrations.
Oh. But, you know, when you think about... That guy made this point about how, you know, if you want to, you can set things up to where everybody does well. Everybody gets a piece. You know? It works for everybody. Instead of, it works for you, the only way it works for you is by keeping your boot on my neck. And it's just appalling that we are still talking about this, and it's 2008, and it's just the same damn thing.
It is. Reverbo, good hearing from you. Sounds to me like you may have some hatch battening to do.
Possibly I do, and remember, you want to.
And my beloved Mountaineers are down there, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're due to play East Carolina University tomorrow, and it either may not be played or it's going to be played in some hellacious rain.
It's going to be some hellacious rain. Well, make it personal, as always, and you want too much pork or just one pork?
How about that? That's a dandy.
I hope you enjoyed that.
All right, I did. Take care, Reverbo. Make it personal, brother.
Have a good weekend, my friend.
All right, will do. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye now. All right, and rolling along, you guys got something on your mind tonight. Let's see, what do we got next? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Gary. How about you?
All right, great. I think about what you said. You are definitely correct. There will be some in church on Sunday. We're going to hear a lot of stuff coming from these evangelical faith-based Christians. But I would say to that there have been a lot of praying and hoping and going on from the black churches for the last couple of months. And considering the weather in Denver when Obama spoke and considering the weather pattern that happened when Bush was supposed to speak, it seems like that God is powerful than their God. So I'm not too much worried about what they're going to do on this Sunday, personally. I know you're nervous about it, but...
I'm not nervous about it. I'm scared of them. In a world that was ruled by reason and common sense, like the rest of the universe is, Gary, I could just sit back, prop my feet up, get me a drink brought to me in a coconut shell with a little paper umbrella in it, and just take a break till November. Not now. Because we don't live, you know, these are not reality-based people. They will lie, they will cheat, they will steal, they will dummy up election machines. They'll put one election machine in a precinct with 10,000 voters and 15 voting machines in a precinct with 12. You know,
how black people stand online for 8 hours to make one vote?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and frankly, in places where African Americans really, really could turn the tide, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina. I mean, we're talking about near unto majority status in every one of those states. The white establishment, the white right-wing Republican establishment, Gary, is busting its ass even as we speak. I mean, they're not sleeping to figure out a way to keep people away from the polls, or if they get to the polls, to keep them from voting. I'm reminded of what happened a couple of years ago in Louisville when the Republican Party of that area sent operatives outside typically majority African-American voting precincts to demand to see driver's licenses of every person that showed up to vote. And, you know, they ran off a good couple of hundred voters.
But, you know, if you look at doing the civil rights movement and everything, there was a point, you know, Johnson and all other people looked at it and said, look, we can't be racist no more. It's not in the long-term best interest of our country. Not that they had any great, you know, compassion for black people and the plight of black people. They just looked at the country and said, you know, things are changing and we have to move forward.
But when Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he said prophetically he said, we have just lost the South for the next generation. Talking about the Democratic Party.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was right. And by 1968, when Richard Nixon was running for the presidency, he came up with with the help of Kevin Phillips, he came up with the so-called Southern Strategy. Yeah. And it has worked like a charm ever since.
Yeah.
So,
Seems like there's a new strategy now. It seems like we're at a new place right now, but.
No, there, no. I'm sorry. There is nothing new. This is real, real hateful old school when Sarah Palin refers to Barack Obama, the editor of the Harvard Law Review, graduate of Harvard Law, graduate of Columbia, literally up from poverty, refers to him as Sambo. Now, there ain't nothing new in that, Gary.
No, what I'm saying to you, I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that, you know, that there's not as you know, what, you know, what is that phrase that Jesus mentioned? He said, you can't pour old wineskins into the...
You can't pour new wine into old wineskins.
Yeah, because it ruins the whole batch. So that's kind of a little bit where we are. But there's going to have to be some spillage. I mean, that's part of the process of going through it. Yeah, there's going to be some old stuff happening. You know, when I was watching her speak the other night, and I'm pretty sure you saw this, but what people didn't realize what we were watching was a Klan rally. That's what it was. When I sat there, when I was watching a little bit of Giuliani speak, I didn't watch too much of Sarah. When she started speaking, I turned it down. I can't listen to her with that voice and that hatred. And I can see what she is. I mean, that was an old-fashioned Klan rally. That was a call to white people everywhere. And, you know, it's very, like, kind of like under the cuff. But right now, as you predicted this, it's starting to get ugly now. You know? That was like the code sign. Okay, let's come out and show our butts. Show that what we really are and what America is about to face is some real ugly stuff. And I hope and pray that they can accept that this is what America is and look in the mirror and say, you know what, my face is ugly and I need to change.
The other part of this is the same, you know, it's the same kind of tactics that were used against Dr. King. There's going to be a whole lot of racist needling of the Obama campaign, hoping, praying that they will lash out.
That's why they picked a woman. I was telling people that, you know, I said people, oh, you just pick. I said, this is why they did it. They're going for the lowest bottom barrel. That's the strategy. He could have picked, you know, anyone else. He could have picked a more competent woman, a more seasoned professional. But they needed to get somebody who can get down at a gutter level and start running their mouth off so that they try to pull Obama back down into that N-word area. Try to define him as an end. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, I do.
They want to get him down there so people start looking at him. He's showing his, you know, whatever. They don't like the fact that, as one of the congressmen said, he's uppity. They don't want him. They don't like it. They want him to come down, Bob. That's the whole point of the situation. And Obama has been very smart. He says, he knows what he's doing. He says, I have to stay high because if I get down that road, that whole legacy that white Americans, other people feel about black people, will come barreling down on him. And that's just too much for one candidate to bear. If he gets down there low, he's going to lose. He has to stay high. You know, he can't get down there with Sarah. They got to isolate her somehow. I don't know what they did. Maybe they didn't get Hillary or Biden jump on her. But he cannot get into a fist fight with her.
You know, that's the thing. You know, never wrestle with a pig. You'll both get muddy, and the pig likes it.
Exactly. And the pig is familiar with the mud. He can breathe in it. You know, after a while, you say, you know what, this thinking, you take your mind off the focus. So, no.
Well, you know, they're opening Obama's headquarters down in Charleston, about 50 miles from here, this coming Tuesday. If I wasn't going to be on the road, I would find a way to put the gas in the vehicle and get there for it.
You heard that after her speech, he raised like $10 million.
She raised him $10 million. I saw the coolest thing, Gary. Came from our buddy Tosh, sent me a note, said he'd seen it somewhere else, but that someone observed that Jesus was a community organizer. Pontius Pilate was the governor.
Governor, exactly. That's beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I'm going to tell you something, Bob. I have to admit, you know, as a black man, I've been in this country for a long time. I've been very cynical of white people. I've gone through my Malcolm X period, gone through my not really a Farrakhan period, but I've been on that other side where I never ever trusted white people and yada, yada, yada. But once in my life, I feel like I can put my bet on a white person. I can put my bet that the white people are going to come out in droves and vote for Obama. Now, I know a lot of people say I'm crazy or whatever.
Now, I'm not going to say you're crazy, but I just, I don't.
I think there are a lot of people out there like me.
But I know that there are a lot of people out there like Sarah Palin, too.
Yeah, I know.
you know, what, 20% of the voters in the 2004 election and in the 2000 election came straight out of their fundamentalist pews to run, not walk, but run, to go and vote for the man who said that Jesus was his favorite philosopher. I mean, it's unsettling. It's unsettling, Gary.
Well, you know, it was on one of my aunts. I was talking about my aunt. A while back, she was telling me about, you know, she really get this book, you know, Purpose-Driven Life and all this other stuff. And I said, you know, I said, I just kind of read the Bible, you know, on my own or whatever. I don't really need to get any books by somebody else who's, you know, rewriting Jesus scripture or whatever.
If I want to find out what he said, I'll go read what he said. This ain't The Art of War by Sun Tzu, where there's a quote from Sun Tzu and then there's nine sages telling you what Sun Tzu meant. Mm-hmm. You can go and you can read in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and the parts that have the red letters, you know, those are his real words.
Yeah.
At least as it's been handed down to us. And you can figure out things pretty easy. I don't need the pop psychology of a Rick Warren or a Joel Osteen. No, because, you know, I think when it says the first, when he says the first commandment is love your neighbor, it means love your neighbor.
Yes,
you know, we'll save the academic stuff for.
That's it. That's really it. Love your God or all your whole, whatever, you know, whatever that guy.
Yeah, it's not love your neighbor as long as your neighbor supports the right to keep and arm bears. Love your neighbor.
Love your neighbor.
And just like in the just like in the Decalogue, when it says don't murder, means don't murder.
Yeah, exactly. No conditions to it, just a certain condition to it. But you know, like I said, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, the thing with Rick Warren, I remember she told me, she said, well, I went to his site and I really started reading some stuff about him. She said, I really didn't like the direction he was going. And I just kind of keep it to myself. I was like, you know, I kind of already know that most of these people, these evangelicals or whatever, they're false prophets. These people are very hateful people. And it's not really even.
That's why I call them evangelicals.
Yeah, no, they are. They are antichrist. So if you're talking about antichrist, you know, we talked about this last time. You know, you look at her speech the other night. Where was the hope in her speech? It was the most sarcastic, evil speech I ever heard. And everybody's talking about such a great speech. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering, okay, wait a minute. You saw something different than what I saw.
Well, then, you know, not just that. I mean, it's the fact, you know, very, very lightly reported, that the speech, the McCain campaign acknowledged that the speech was written before Sarah Palin was the nominee.
It was written for a man. They had to, exactly.
Yeah, they had to feminize it.
Yeah, they had feminized it a little bit. But, you know, there had to be something that pissed people off to say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, people say, we're going to send $10 million to Obama. So for people to sit there and say, it was such a great speech, no, that wasn't a great speech. It was a hateful speech. It pissed a lot of people off. And I'm saying, not only did it piss people off, it scared the hell out of people. But they said, you know what, I'm going to his campaign, and within 24 hours, he had $10 million in the bank. That tells you a lot, and let me tell you something.
And that's $10 million, 5, 10, 25, 50, and 100 bucks at a time.
That's right. And I'm going to tell you something. It was not coming from just black people. Matter of fact, most of them probably were white. So, oh, no. People on both sides of the aisle, black, white, Mexican, Puerto Rican, or whatever, looked at that GOP convention, and they saw barely no ethnic diversity. And basically, really didn't see that many young people. And what they saw was a bunch of older, rich people.
Terrified.
Exactly. Sometimes I don't like to get into the race thing. Sometimes I say white because, you know, people like Jeremiah Wright and all the other people kind of marginalized a little bit. This really is a class thing. They use the white thing or whatever. There's more poor whites in this country, and they're the ones nobody ever talks about, you know.
Well, yeah, and both sides. You know, nobody, when the right wing's going away hammering tongs about welfare, they're creating an image, and we've discussed this, too, in the past, Gary. They're creating an image, you know, Ronald Reagan even did it overtly, of an African-American. But the vast majority of welfare benefits in this country are consumed by poor whites.
Poor white female, basically, from what I've read. It's poor white who don't, you know, pretty much don't.
And who are, in turn, in many instances, poor white females, because we've pulled the entire social safety net out from under their feet.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't know, too. Like, and I was telling people, because I travel sometimes, around different cities, is that they don't realize that one of the largest populations in this country is large white females. There's so many that, in fact, they even estimate that a lot of women in certain cities, certain places, will never, ever meet somebody and get married because there's just so many large amounts of white females. And it's the same thing in terms of poverty. You see a lot of that, but nobody really talks about the poor white female who's on welfare. It's always, like you said, this image of the black woman. Yeah, the black woman has a problem because a lot of black, you know, a quarter of black men are in jail, you know, or in some kind of economic situation. But girls, there's a lot more white women than white men in this country. That's just how it is. And nobody talks about that fact in life. It just kind of wants to put all of this poverty off on Mexicans and blacks. And I think it's unfortunate because a lot of whites are being a lot of poor whites are not being represented. They're being tricked, basically.
No, but you know what? A lot of those poor whites, Gary, they're either registered independent or they're registered Republican. And the one place that they do get to go, because they don't really charge admission, and you know, they let you in the door and then they charge admission, is church. And they go to church and they get told from the pulpit that, you know, Republicans have family values.
The pimp at the pulpit is the same equation.
Well, I think that's our second potential song title of the night, Gary. We started out with Baghdad on the Bayou, and now we got the pimp in the pulpit.
Oh, yeah, because a woman, a lot of the poor women, unfortunately, when they get down and out, and it's not a sexist comment, they sometimes have a tendency, because of the father or whatever, to want to find a strong male image. And the pimp and the people, the men in the church, put this divine figure, and they put so much stock in this guy, and they give him such a big pass, and all he is just a regular person, and a lot of
times, yeah, but remember what Sarah Palin's pastor said. He said, I get so sick of hearing people criticize George Bush because it's just like criticizing the pastor. All it's going to do is send you to hell.
Yeah, I didn't get that one.
Yeah, because see, she's got a heck of a lot bigger problem with Pastor Kalman's than Obama ever had with Pastor Wright, because Pastor Wright was actually backing up a lot of his, you know, okay, so some people might have problems with the specific language, but he was pointing out real problems in this country. Whereas this fundamentalist, you know, and he really is. I mean, this guy's a Pentecostal, okay? You know, people just roll out in the pews and start, you know, going at it. He wasn't laying out an extended litany of the problems that America faces. He told people that he was pretty sure that if they were in his church and they'd voted for John Kerry, he was sure that they were not saved anymore. And he said, if you criticize George Bush, just like if you criticize me, you're going to hell.
Well, I also heard something about that supposedly there's some statements that came out recently. I guess he has some audio tape of him talking about, you know, the Jews, and he's very anti-Semitic.
Well, that was actually the founder and leader of Jews for Jesus that was invited to that floor rolling snake handling church 3 weeks ago now. It was 3 weeks ago. Sarah Palin was sitting in the pews with her precious little pumpkins, and she was sitting there hearing it. It wasn't any 20, 25 years ago. It was 3 weeks ago, and she sat there and heard a man say that terrorism in the Middle East is God's judgment on the Jews for not getting all baptized and Christianed up.
This thing is getting, you know.
She didn't get up and walk out.
Bob, but the thing is, you're not going to hear too much about it in the corporate-owned media. But I will say this, you know, and I saw this yesterday. I mean, Pat Buchanan and Chris Matthews looked like they were about to come to blows. I mean, Chris really was going off on him, telling him to say, you know what? You know, McCain will have to bring out the press. And she's going to be, you know, a heartbeat away from the president.
But they've already said she will not be brought out to the press, because they have found enough skeletons in her closet, and there are more. I've been doing a little digging. Some others here on the horn been doing a little digging. There's more skeletons, and they have found, and I would imagine that the McCain campaign has already found them, and they figured out that the only way to insulate her against them is to treat her like a Soviet leader and only trot her out for state occasions.
Yeah. I think the Obama campaign could, at that point, say, look, you know, say something to the effect that, you know, she can't get no special treatment. And, you know, and I think they do need to kind of hit hard on that.
I wouldn't be surprised to see her have a bad case of the flu or something about time for her to have her debate with Joe Biden.
I've been thinking what Dave, you know, David said the other day, and I'm still with his theory. I think that, you know how I feel about this whole thing. I've been saying that that McCain is hiding. He saw the speech last night, how people gave a bad review and everything else. And I see that it seems like now, from what I've seen so far, that they're not getting really that much of a bump from the convention in terms of the polls. He's not, the polls I think are rigged anyway. But I think that McCain once again is hiding. He's throwing up this woman and all the smoke. Oh, you know, she's locked out, whatever. And it's clear to me all she is nothing but a freaking Coke bottle that you shake up, you put in your refrigerator, you open it up, and it pops. And then you got a mess all over the place. You got to clean it up. And that's all to me she is. I don't see her being long-term affecting this campaign. Short-term, maybe a little spike here and there. But she got some issues, man. And that voice, she just doesn't come across to me, not being biased. It's somebody who's going to stand up long term. I'll be very surprised if she makes it all the way on the ticket to the end. I mean,
nah, she's going to November, Gary.
You think so?
Take it to the bank.
Okay. Even if McCain's like down 20 points in the polls and scandal after scandals comes out about her.
They're married. Because they've already done the math, okay? And they're counting on another one of those 51 to 49, 52 to 48, 48 to 47, and, you know, a few percentage points for the third party disaffected. They're counting on one of those. That's how they're going to win. That's how they won the last two.
But here's the thing.
And if they and they've got to have, they've got to absolutely energize and positively jack up the fundies. And they cannot get shed of her without without sending all the fundies back behind the baseboards.
I don't know, man. I don't think their ground game is that good. I think he might. I think the fundies are nice, but I still say Obama's ground game. I mean, they're spreading out offices like crazy. I mean, I was going to actually go work for a campaign tomorrow. I can't do it tomorrow, but I mean, they really are taking that money and they're really using it. So I'll be surprised if thing is close. I think it'll be close to some states. But I think he's going to win an electoral landslide. That's just my personal opinion. I just don't see how that hatred and that and McCain, because he's at the top of the ticket, Bob. I mean, all said and done, you know, Perel's nice and everything. McCain just ain't influencing people. I mean, they said that people weren't even motivated at the convention the other night. They said people leaving in the middle of his speech. There's just no energy there. So to me, that tells me who's going to get out and go knock on doors for this guy, unless they're paid, you know. I don't know. I just don't. You know, I don't know if it's gonna be that close. But
there, but do you disagree with me that that's what they're praying and counting on?
Well, oh yeah, yeah. No, they
ain't got no landslide on their hands.
Oh yeah, yeah. No.
The only okay. Wait. Let me qualify that. The only hope they have for a massive sea change in attitude.
Media.
No, I'm talking about the voters. The only thing the McCain camp has in the way of hoping for a big time turnaround is a big time terrorist attack. Because they've already told us, it's already been said repeatedly, that a terrorist attack works to John McCain's advantage. Now, why that is, I think it has something to do with the general stupidity of a whole bunch of the American electorate. But that could possibly create that scenario. They're counting, however, on it being tighter than the space between two rocks. And
I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible. I think the media. I think the only thing I'm scared more of the media than the actual. And I think they are going to try to start something with Russia or Iran. I have no doubt about they're going to try something. So I agree with you on that. My concern is really with the media. Is the media going to actually be fair? We know that it's not, but how far are they not going to be fair to Obama and the campaign? And I just got a strange feeling that I think McCain made a big mistake this week, because I think he's been pissed off some people in the media. And I think he already had the media on his side, so I don't know why he would come out and call out the media like that. Because I'm telling you, it seems like they're not ready to push back on him. And, you know, Joe Klein, a lot of other people not like him.
Well, when Campbell Brown turns into a for-profit media journalism giant,
for simply pressing on one of McCain's spokesmen to name one executive decision Sarah Palin has made.
Mm-hmm.
And then they push back and cancel the Larry King Live interview.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I guarantee you that's the last time she'll do that, because she's probably one of the worst of all of them. You know, I was even surprised she went that far. When I saw her interview, and I'm like, wow, I'm surprised. And I'm like, that's not really a hard interview. If they think that's hard, look at the Bill O'Reilly Obama thing.
Now, I know lawyers that have kept witnesses in deposition for, 14 hours because they won't answer one question. And they sit there and they say, I'm going to ask the question again, and if you answer it this time, we'll move on. But I'm not going to stop asking this till you answer it. And so what Campbell Brown did was, that was child's play.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, it's child's play. And they go, oh my God, and Obama has gone through this. Hillary Clinton went through more crap with Chris Matthews and all these other people and Bill Clinton than anybody ever has gone through. So I don't see how McCain, he's like been hiding. You know, he won't do any interviews now. They're just a bunch of punks. I mean, come out, but they don't have an agenda. They're corrupt. And they know it. So to be honest with you, they're doing the right thing. I don't blame them. I wouldn't show up. Why would I show up when I know I got all these issues? Can't blame them, really.
there's some tone deafness going on too. I don't know if they're assuming that the media would never look at something like this, or if they're assuming that we're too stupid to figure out stuff like this. Cindy McCain walked out with $250,000 worth of jewelry around her neck, hanging from her ears and pinned to her coat the other night.
And we really wouldn't have known that unless the press reported it.
Well, but it was Vanity Fair. No, it was Vogue. It was Vogue.
I'm just saying. But I'm saying at least somebody's doing something. You got the blog spitting it out there. You know, it helped. That helped. You know, Drudge is now, I think, been running with this story. You know, Oprah's story, which Oprah said is not true now, that, you know, about having Palin on her show, says she won't have them. And he's had it on there, like, I guess I checked back here a few hours ago, he had it on there again. So he's really trying to push this story, which is not a story. And, you know, they all follow that fool. So it's like, you know, that's the only thing that bothers me, because media does influence the electorate a little bit. I don't know how much it is, but I think they influence at least 10-15%. And, you know, in terms of just hard numbers.
Oh, in terms of the demographic that watches Fox, they take their cues there. There's no getting around that.
Yeah. Well, but I think also the media has also, I've been noticing, has hit a saturation point with Obama. And I kind of noticed this last time. They needed some fresh meat. So like Sarah Palin or whatever her name is, that was like manna from heaven to them. Because they're like, wow, we got something else to, you know, talk about. We got something else to write. We got some more interesting curvatures to write into our articles. Because they really were getting there.
Well, they got to be loving her, because she's got all of this sort of Peyton Place on the Tundra thing going on for her whole family. There's plenty of trash to dig. Yeah, how much fun would it have been to have had Joe Lieberman for the media, for-profit media? How much fun would Willard Romney have really been? Because we already know what he did to that poor dog. Seamus, I think, was his name. Stuck him in the cage and strapped him down to the roof of the family station wagon and drove from Massachusetts way up into Canada with him and said he enjoyed it. How much was there to do?
Well, I would say probably not that much, but I would say that Sarah has a high burn rate. In other words, you know, she's going to have this big rush, but you're going to have, you know, like you drink a Coke or whatever.
What a great term.
No, I think that's what it is.
That sounds like a downright pundit term, Gary. That's a beauty. She's got a high burn rate.
She does. I'm saying. I mean, you know, and that's what I think.
Yeah, so she's going to flame out in a hurry?
Flame out, man. She's burning. Don't you think she's burning? She's coming out all guns. Come on, she's going to burn out quick. You know, by the time she gets to, like you said, the debate, I just don't think, I don't know, maybe it's just me. I'm just looking at this whole situation, this kind of macro figure thing, try to look a project in the future. She just seems like somebody who's got like 15 minutes. Because there's nothing really behind there but a bunch of trash and garbage. And I just don't see her, you know, Leafwood, you know, whether you like McCain or not, there's a story behind McCain. You know.
Yeah, there's a semi-legitimate narrative.
Exactly. you know.
It's been significantly embellished because, yes. You know, now every time, you know, in the for-profit media, every time you refer to him, you have to refer to him as Republican presidential nominee war hero John McCain. And half of the Democrats refer to him that way, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see where the heroism is. Now, look, you put on the uniform, you take your orders, you do your job, you've performed honorable service to this country.
Well, my sister said, how is he a hero when she watched Rambo, he gets away out of the cave? You know, I didn't think, you know, that's a nice thing to say, but she said getting caught. You know, you got caught and you get tortured and everything, but it's not like he saved a million lives. I mean, he was dropping bombs on people.
He may have taken a million.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
But there's so much more. This guy crashed 5 planes. Had he not been an admiral's son, he would not have graduated from Pensacola. He crashed 5 military aircraft that the American taxpayers paid for, and then they gave him a 5th one and actually sent him over enemy territory, and sometimes I wonder what the motivation was behind that.
Well, he lied last night, I think, about, he said how, you saw the speech, right?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, basically, he went to the story of how when he was broken, when they finally broke him in prison, he said he became this person. He started thinking about himself. He was saying how he used to be about himself and all this. And, you know, he basically had some metamorphosis that now he started seeing things in a brighter light and how he was his country's man now. But then, okay, fine. But then he comes back and he becomes this serial adulterer.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'm calling BS because he was a playboy before he left for Vietnam. And when he got back, he was a playboy, too. So I don't see just a heck of a lot of a Road to Damascus moment anywhere in that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering, is anybody ever going to point that out, or is that just, like, off-limits?
It's off-limits, Gary. You cannot say a blooming word about anything related to John McCain's military service because you'll be called unpatriotic. You'll be, you're attacking them. It's just like them Vietnam veterans what got spit on when they come back. Oh, mercy. And all the while, everybody forgets the right wing and the Republican Party with those god-awful little stupid Purple Heart Band-Aids on their faces at their little clavern in 2004. Well, everybody else forgets, but the, you know, diehards like me, you, everybody else listening to this program.
But I just don't see it. And maybe, you know, I watched the speech. I guess you didn't see it, but near the end, I turned to my sister and I told her, I said, well, this sounds more like a concession speech. I mean, it really sounded like he was telling this story in a sad way. And, you know, I mean, that's how I was getting this feeling. And a lot of people saying it was down and he didn't have no, but I almost had a strange feeling that he was just like, and I thought it was really cool.
No, that's the thing. I mean, I saw some clips earlier today, Gary. He wasn't down. That's about as animated as that poor old sod gets. I mean, he was up past bedtime for starters. They probably had to meth him up just to get him there.
But yeah, but I'm saying is that it was clear to me 2000 was his only shot, and it's passing by. You know, it's just ain't his time.
Yeah, 2000, he was a 64-year-old senator.
Yeah.
2000, okay.
Yeah.
But now, no. There's a long time, relatively speaking, between 62 or 64 and 72.
Yeah.
More things.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was going to say, even though he's dumber than Bush, the fact that he hates Cheney may have kept Cheney away from the White House, which made so maybe things would have been a little bit better under him. Probably wouldn't have been much better. But, you know, you probably didn't have to worry about certain things. So, you know, and I don't want to give him a credit because, you know, whatever, but I'm just saying that I think 2000 was his time. And what I saw last night was a person who's just, you know, his time has passed. Some past, come man.
And, well, you know, the business with the green screen, I read about that and I saw where our chat room moderator ELO was talking about it too. Did you see that green screen he was standing in front of?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out just because of the camera angles, we couldn't see. It wasn't a green screen. There was a big old photograph behind it.
It's a photograph of a mansion.
No, it wasn't a mansion. It was a school. It was like a middle school.
It looked like a mansion.
Well, it turns out it is, and this is where it gets even even more amazing. I read this earlier, I think, over at Daily Coast. It's a middle school called Walter Reed School.
Uh-huh.
And what's even more horrifying is these dumb bastards thought that they were putting up a picture of Walter Reed Army Medical Center. It was Walter Reed School, and there was just a whole bunch of lawn back above his head.
No, it was very nice. I'm telling you, from a distance, you look at it, looked like a mansion.
It does. I mean, I've seen the photographs.
Yeah, and I was looking. I was like, he has a housing issue. Why is he not showing this really nice house? That's what I missed. I didn't know it was school. I mean, I thought it could have been an office building, a hotel, but it kind of looked just kind of upscale to me. I don't want to say upscale, but you know what I mean. And I was like, I don't know what that is about. Wow.
Because that was the next thing. You know, are these people so daggum tone deaf that they would put up a mansion behind a picture of a guy who's fighting off criticisms because he has seven mansions?
Well, it's like they don't really do research. I mean, you know, like when you read that thing about Georgia, that was like straight off Wikipedia. And it's like anybody knows you just can't go off of Wikipedia. You have to do other research.
No, Wikipedia, well, it's like Ben Birch said the other night. Wikipedia is a gateway to other information.
Yeah, but he was reading it word for word. The person just...
But what do you want? I mean, I don't know who the people are who are working this campaign, Gary, but they're having... I got a feeling they got trouble with their candidate because, you know, look, that's not the first time they've been caught doing something like that because they got nailed, they got drilled when the Cindy supposedly ripped off the Food Network. They got drilled again when she ripped off the Hershey Corporation for a cookie recipe.
I think it shows you that they're not going to do anything when they get in office. If they're that lazy now in the campaign, you can pretty much expect that they're not going to do anything when they get in the White House. Nothing will change.
Yeah, but see, McCain is one of, you know, he doesn't believe in the internet.
Okay. So he's losing to a guy who's using the internet and he doesn't believe in it. Wow.
And because he doesn't believe in the internet, that means that he doesn't think that he's going to get caught using anything from it. It's like he thinks he's the only guy who has access.
It's sad, man.
Gary, the people behind him who follow him are much the same. These are people who pass around emails, you know, and like I said the other night, it never costs a cent. It does not cost a cent. Meanwhile, Obama's out here spending $1 million here, $1 million there, paying off media organizations to run ads, and they're companies that hate his guts to begin with. And the right wing is circulating emails about whether, you know, whether his birth certificate's any good, all right? I mean, I've seen them. They're circulating emails about the grasshopper and the ant and how, you know, that's the ants are the hard-working conservatives and the liberals are the grasshoppers who just eat up everything. I mean, it's all...
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole sample.
And you can't get any of these people to go to Snopes and even verify any of this craziness.
But, you know, that's the whole sample thing, you know. So it goes back to that, you know. You know, you see the big mouth on the sample, you know.
Yeah,
if he eats up everything, you know, he big eyes, he wants everything. Doesn't, you know? But his hands, he doesn't do anything with his hands. You know, I remember one time I was taking an art class and they were talking about, you know, different images, and they were talking about, you know, racial images, and that's one of the things they were talking about. Yeah, all this kind of stuff goes back to this whole stereotype that, you know, that makes, you know, people come here or, you know, immigrants or whatever, they're lazy, they don't want to work. But everybody knows that African Americans in this country work harder, more likely than most people. You know, throughout this country, we helped build it mainly. You know, and the immigrants came in afterwards and helped kind of modernize everything. But the bottom line is that there's always this stereotype that African Americans don't work hard or they're lazy or they got some special break. And now you look at Obama has done all the stuff and his wife, who's done all of this stuff. And now they are like lazy, elitist, and upbeat. Meanwhile, Sarah supposedly went to 5 different schools, has a journalism degree, was a sports writer, was a beauty queen. You know, she's been a mayor of a city of, like, what, 9,000 people with a budget of, like, what, 20 million or something like that? I don't know, 8 million? I don't know what it was. But yet, she'd be on the same level as Obama. It's just like, it's, And he went to Harvard. I mean, you know, he studied constitutional law, international law. He studied journalism. I mean, come on. This is not using the form of accent, man. This is just crazy. It is crazy. America is getting a straight lesson of what we learn, African Americans learn every day. We have to be 18,000 times better because of the way the system is set up. And it's sad, but I think, like you said, it's been exposed, and I think, you know, we're getting to the point where everybody's going to be treated on their merit. You know, I'm going to vote for Obama. I'll never vote for Obama because he's black. I'm not initially like, you know, Dennis Kucinich and then Edwards. And most black people are not voting for Obama because he's black. They voted for Kerry and Clinton. He's in the Democratic Party. If he was a Republican, they wouldn't be voting for him. I can tell you that right now. You have a few.
Yeah, like J.C. Watts. Out in Oklahoma. Yeah.
If Obama was carrying Bush's torch, how many black people do you think would be voting for Obama?
Oh. No. If Obama was the third Bush term,
Yeah, I mean, Clarence Thomas, if Clarence Thomas showed up in the wrong neighborhood, I don't know if he would get out. I'm serious. I don't know. If people knew that was him and he was in the wrong neighborhood, that's how much disdain black people have for that guy. Just because you're black is not what it's about.
I got to tell you, I did enjoy that slightly shocked look I got from that guy yesterday when I said, we're going to get him, and I love that T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, I was looking at earlier.
I got that look, and I said, no, really. I'm voting for him, and I'm trying to get everybody I can find to vote for him.
Wasn't that a beautiful look?
The first look of shock was, you know, not. But then when he realized I was for real, yeah, that was a beautiful moment we shared.
Yeah, did he kind of like smile or whatever, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, when he realized I was for real.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that smile when Obama becomes president.
Well, I'll be smiling that smile too.
Yeah, a lot of people will be smiling, white and black, because there are a lot of whites who want to see. Let's move past the racial issues.
Well, if we can just get shed of this filthy Bush cabal and start getting down to the business of getting the work done, I think we can all just take a moment on January the 20th and just hear Dr. King in our own heads again saying, free at last, thank God Almighty I'm free at last, because the last 8 years have felt like a form of bondage.
Man, I tell you what. We are seeing it, right? We're seeing it ahead. I don't know which. I'll be honest, too. I'm not going to say, yeah, I'm so confident that he's going to walk through the gate, but the White House. But I would say this. I'm feeling very, very good about it. Very, very good about it. That's what I would say. Because either way, no matter what happens, Bob, I'm a firm believer in knowing. I like to know things. If Obama loses, and remember, it's not just a black guy on the ticket. Hello, there's a white man on the ticket, a competent. Biden, whatever people want to think about, is a good man. And, he might have made some votes that I didn't like. Obama makes a lot of votes I don't like. Man, I ain't scared of Biden. I'm not scared of Obama.
I don't have this the gut freezing fear of Biden being president.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Sarah Palin, I get all weak in the knees and start trying to figure out how much a a plane ticket out of here costs. Because yeah, she's scary.
It's going to get ugly. I'm telling you, it will be ugly. I mean, you will go to bed that night with, like, your heart racing, knowing that McCain is not a president, because you don't know when that war is going to start.
I'll be on the air, and we'll probably have Full Tilt Boogie election coverage come November.
Yeah.
And probably the microphone will be picking up this noise all night long. And those are my little fingers drumming on the desktop, just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I won't feel good until Obama has put his hand in the air and has been sworn in. Then I'll take a deep breath. If I wasn't going to be on the air election night, I would be sitting somewhere. Probably gently medicated, because otherwise I'm nervous as a whore in church. It's just too scary. Gary, I got to roll along, but great conversation, my friend. Have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, you too.
All right. Bye now. It's our buddy Gary from Maryland. And let's see.
Brooklyn.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Yeah, a lot. Is it me, but I fell asleep in the beginning of McCain's speech, and he was talking about Vietnam. I dozed off for a while, and I woke up, and he was still talking about Vietnam.
He mentioned being a POW something like 23 times, and he mentioned being president 8. I think somebody actually did the math.
Okay. You know, I just wanted to make sure it was me. But to expound on the conversation that you and Gary had, it's amazing. You know, it all boils down to this, and, you know, the Republican Party and their mindset. You can graduate from Harvard. You can go to the best schools. You can do, and Obama has done everything they wanted, pull himself up from the bootstraps. But you still better know your place. And being president is no place for you.
And see, remember that we were told every time we as liberals, progressives, Democrats, decent people, whatever, every time we said, yeah, but George Bush is a moron, all the little right-wingers started hopping up and down saying, well, he went to Yale and he went to Harvard.
Yeah, but...
But suddenly that doesn't count because, I mean, it, you know, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah, what community college did Palin graduate from?
Oh, now. I think she went to the University of Idaho or Spud Tech or, I don't know, maybe she went to Boise State. Or,
okay, I got it.
No, it's a real physical place, you know. One of them's in Moscow, Idaho. Boise State's in, obviously, Boise. I think it was Idaho or Idaho State she went to and got a degree in journalism there.
Oh, okay. Whatever. Yeah.
Hey, she had a minor in political science.
Okay. You know, hey. I just don't know. It's so strange to me, though. And again, it's like, but I tell you one thing. I called last night, and you weren't on the air, and I spoke with Agnes. Tell her I said hi.
Will do.
Yeah. You saw what Keith Olbermann said about the whole 9/11 thing?
No.
Keith Olbermann has balls the size of cannons. He said, this is my own personal opinion, but what the Republicans did here when they went through the whole 9/11 thing is shameful. I have friends that died there, and what they did was shameful. And I'm sorry, and as a journalist, I am sorry that he said something, as a journalist, I'm sorry that you had to view that, and what they've done is subliminal. They're messing with, basically you say, they're messing with your mind to bring back, rehash those fears again.
And they were.
YouTube, huh?
And they were. That's just straight up fact.
Keith Olbermann is the man.
I'm surprised that the right wingers didn't just bust into a full on chant of 9-1-1. 911, 911, just, you know, or 911, USA, 911, USA. Wouldn't have shocked me a bit. And then there's that photo. Have you seen the photo out there, Kevin? I got it sent to me by an intrepid listener, and I think it showed up in some other places as well. It's a photo of Sarah Palin standing at the podium with her right arm extended. You know, it hasn't been photoshopped. Her right arm extended in a full Nazi salute, and then the lighting treatment coming down beside it is the Nazi lightning bolt S.
I can believe that. I can definitely believe that. I'm not surprised with these people. You know, these are the same people.
If she wasn't already dead, I would swear that Leni Riefenstahl had choreographed the entire Republican National Convention.
Hey, Karl Rove has his hand in it. Where did he get his ideas from?
Leni Riefenstahl's little love child, absolutely.
Yeah, and Mein Kampf, you know.
Oh, I know. He mailed in the matchbook to the Goebbels correspondence course for media manipulation too.
but you know what? At the end of the day, I agree with what's his name from Gary from Maryland, where Obama is most likely going to win, but it's going to be close. And what scares me as an African American, I kind of look at politics ever since Obama got into it. As the black man's guide for boxing, where you cannot leave it to the judges. You got to win by knockout.
Well, there's,
judges, you lost.
Yeah, if it goes in, and the it's a draw. Yeah, I remember some of those. No, yeah. And the thing is, what I want, you know, if I'm getting my druthers, Kevin, I want a victory by, I want Obama to get at least 56-57% of the vote.
Oh, yeah.
I want him to get that because I don't want to hear Flush Limbaugh saying, well, if it wasn't for Bob Barr, my friends, you know, because that was always his argument with Bill Clinton. If it hadn't been for Ross Perot.
Yeah. But also, you know, because even GE, you notice they're not saying too much negativity. Even the right wingers on CSNBC and MSNBC aren't saying too much against Barack Obama.
Just covering their bases, do you think?
Oh, yeah, because at the end of the day, GE controls the media. GE is the most powerful media. Don't forget, most of these right-wingers owe their very existence to GE, because if it wasn't for GE, what was Reagan if it wasn't for GE rescuing him?
GE Theater.
Yeah.
Very true. That and 20 Mule Team Borax.
Yeah.
I remember seeing those reruns when I was a kid. Oh, my God. But, yeah, there's an element of truth in what you're talking about.
Okay, so GE is running the show, and I don't know what kind of deals were made in the back rooms, but trust me. It amazes me how ESPN and our news has become the same, where they have to do the sports commentary.
That's not really so surprising, though, Kevin, and it's not directly attributable to General Electric. That goes back to when ABC elevated Rune Arledge from head of the ABC Sports Division to being head of the ABC News Division. Because he had created a very, very viable model in ABC Sports, and he was the father of the wide world of sports, among other things.
But if you notice the way news coverage, especially political, it has become sports coverage.
Sure it is, and it's become the National Enquirer, and the National Enquirer's become the real journalists.
Yeah. What was Bill O'Reilly before? Fuck.
He was tabloid television. And by the way, apparently Rupert Murdoch hates Bill O'Reilly's guts.
Rupert Murdoch was a communist or a socialist.
Well, there's a very interesting little blurb article about him in Vanity Fair that it was News Ninja Gene sent it to me. And it makes passing reference to the fact that Rupert Murdoch despises Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, I guess the old bass is not so bad after all. But, you know, I guess he can tolerate him as long as he's making me money, though.
Well, that's always the calculus with somebody like Murdoch.
Yeah.
And it's the calculus with anybody who runs a for-profit media conglomeration. Because that's why we call it the for-profit media. They're not concerned with content. They're not concerned with journalism. They're not concerned with ethics. All of those things are sublimated to the notion of making a buck.
And Bill O'Reilly feeds into every bigoted.
Well, have you seen the first segment of the Obama O'Reilly conversation?
I'm trying to ignore his ass, but go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I watched it, and it was unpleasant, and it was hard to watch, and once again, I was sitting there going, you know, who? Come on, Barack, who's telling you this is a good idea?
Well, you know, he wants to take it to them, and I think it is, at the end of the day, a good strategy. You have to understand the game that's being played here, and the game that's being played here is office politics 101. I have a friend of mine who is a manager of a department, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a black guy, you know, head of a department. And he deals with a lot of suburban mother types. And, okay, and I don't think he's a, you know, I don't think he's a mean boss. You know, he said, look, you know, for all you who have responsibilities, you can work from 10 to 6. Come in at 10 and, you know, leave at 6. A lot of these women take that as 10:30 to 4:30. Okay. You know,
sure.
11 to 3, whatever you want to do it. And when
that goes back to the old saying about as long as they pretend to pay us, we'll pretend to work.
Yeah. And the thing is, he said, look, we made an agreement. If you have children to get off to school, it's 10 to 6. You came in at, you know, at least every 2 or 3 months, he can count on a complaint being filed against him with human resources.
Sure he can. Sure he can.
Because they so lose then. A person of color being in charge of them, and this is what Palin is serving as, the soccer mom who's being bullied by the black guy.
Oh, for pity's sakes! I mean, forgive me, but you know, oh, for pity's sakes!
But that's the way it's going to play itself out.
Well, it may very
well. People vote with their gut. People vote with their gut, and
you know, now that we know some of the language that she uses. I really and sincerely hope we can see the Mark Furmaning of Sarah Palin.
Yeah. Well, all too often, a lot of these soccer moms use those same remarks, too.
Sure they do. The woman who sort of dropped the dime on Sarah Palin using this language, Kevin, you know, she said she told all of this and stood up for her own words, but she said, that's Alaska. As if, you know, Alaska's racist, Alaska's bigoted, and Alaska is too small-minded and petty to ever rise above that evil garbage.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? There's some sad truth to it, because that's Minnesota, that's Idaho, that's, you know, the Dakotas.
But it's also certain segments of New York City. It's also parts of Boston.
Oh, yeah.
It's also parts of Chicago. I mean, nobody's got a lock on racism.
No, you're absolutely right, because, you know, if I drive 5 minutes outside of the five boroughs, it changes drastically.
Well, sure it does. And you know, look at the stuff that happened in Bed-Stuy. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's
what happened in Bed-Stuy?
Oh, I mean, years back, you know, the riots in Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Bensonhurst.
And
Crown Heights, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there news I don't know about?
No. I'm just talking about, I mean, the busing riots in Denver, in Boston.
Yeah.
There's no lock, but when we run into trouble is when we adopt that attitude of, it's Alaska. You know, it's wherever. Then we're in trouble, because that means we're not going to try to correct it.
Yeah.
That we've been beaten, that we know we've been beaten, and that there's not just a heck of a lot we can do about it. Kevin, any big plans for the weekend?
No, not this weekend. Actually, we're going to have a storm here.
Oh, really? Some nasty going to hit?
Yeah, the one that's coming from the Carolinas.
Oh, Hannah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, Ike may be behind that.
Yeah, well, whatever. Take it all in stride.
Yeah, buckle up, brother.
Okay, then.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Kevin calling from Brooklyn and rolling onward. Oh, darn it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
This is Rick Goodner.
Yeah, I'm sorry I kept you waiting so long. We've been stacked to the walls this evening.
I was absolutely enthralled with the listeners you had. This was wonderful. And I won't stay too long, because I know you have other listeners. But I had to take you to task on something. You said something about, a prostitute being uncomfortable in church.
Oh, yeah, that's just one of them sayings.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, but I thought all churches are full of prostitutes.
Well, and they are, and you're right.
Oh, anyway, I was very depressed for the whole week. Everybody kept coming in talking about, oh, how wonderful things are, and the Republicans are going to be back on top, and the little lady's just going to do such good stuff. And I wouldn't listen to her speech because just looking at her makes me want to throw up. And I remember walking into the cafeteria. A bunch of the nurses were sitting around, you know, the people who say that they were both for Tiger Woods but not for Obama. You know, a little statement of, I'm not racist, I just won't vote for him. And I always wonder, what's the big deal that Tiger Woods has done about politics? Is he really good at foreign policy? You never could figure that out. But anyway.
No, but they'd like to have a beer with Tiger Woods.
Yeah, go get that beer. You know, I'm going to have to be drunk if I'm going to hang out with these Republicans. Just have to be. But, you know, they were tearing into it. So finally, I just stood up, walked over, and said as loudly as I could, the only thing I didn't like about her speech was she didn't bring her pom-pom. Then I waited and looked. The entire cafeteria shut up. Stared at me. And it was like, I ain't going to be the first to say anything. And so I just walked on out. It was just so nice shutting them up. It was good. But then I heard her speech. God, I listened to Governor Apollon. There's no there there. This woman could be beat. All she did was throw red meat to the Republican Pavlovian dog.
And they were slobbering like fools by the time
she
did.
Salivating, and that was it.
Well, you know, I can't help wondering, Rick, and you can probably address some of this, perhaps. Now, this woman says that she is a sure enough Bible-believing Christian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the literal truth. It is the literal word of the living God.
Absolutely.
Right? And you know, I mean, it's not subject to interpretation. It's not allegory. The world was created in 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now she has a daughter. She has a daughter that's been out a-romping, as we like to say up here. She's been a-romping.
Been out rutting.
Yeah. That boy was in there, and there he was, a-rutting on my Mayeller. Yeah, just like that. And there he was, a-rutting on my Bristol. Now she's a biblical literalist, and she got a romping daughter. And I'd love to have a chance to just direct her attention to the 22nd chapter of Deuteronomy, Brother Rick.
Oh God, I know that one. Go ahead.
Deuteronomy 22:13-21. Here is today's reading, my brother.
Please, I bow my head.
If any man take a wife and go in unto her and hate her, and give occasions of speech against her, and bring up an evil name upon her, and say, I took this here woman, and when I come to her, I found her not a maiden. Then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity unto the elders of the city in the gate.
Amen.
And the damsel's father shall say unto the elders, I gave my daughter unto this man to wife, and he hateth her. And lo, he hath given occasions of speech again her, saying, I found not thy daughter a maiden. And yet these are the tokens of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city. And the elders of that city shall take that man and chastise him.
Mm-hmm.
And they shall immerse him in 100 shekels of silver, and give them unto the father of the damsel, because he hath brought up an evil name upon a virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife, and he may not put her away all his days. But, there's always a but in Deuteronomy, you know. But, if this thing be true, and the tokens of virginity be not found for the damsel, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she die, because she hath wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house. So shalt thou put evil away from among you. Here endeth the lesson.
That's little.
Now, she is a biblical literalist, and I'd say it's about damn time that they take little Bristol out to the city gate of Moose Lips or wherever the hell they live and stone her to death.
You know, like the MySpace guy, I mean, he could get his buddies together. They're like going out shooting.
Sure they do.
You know, just load up those guns of rock. It'd be fun.
Well, you know, they don't even have, they could just whomp her real good with their butts of their shotguns.
Amen. Amen. Praise the Lord. And, you know, I kind of worry about that guy because he seems to think that the most fun in the world is being out with the guys. You know, going out and doing things with the guys. He kept mentioning that on his MySpace before they changed it.
Yeah, you remember that old beer jingle, Rick, that went, tonight is kind of special, the beer will flow. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Tonight's a night for Michelob or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although I got to admit, it's, you know, for, you know, what's his name, Levi Fed or whatever we're calling him. I gotta think, you know, he's probably a Milwaukee's best man when you get right down to it.
You know, most abusers smoke Marlboro Reds and they drink Budweiser. So I'd say Budweiser because I bet you this guy's going to be an abuser and a half.
I don't know if he's going to get a chance to because I got a feeling he's going to get disappeared to the Iraqi meat grinder pretty darn quick.
Yeah, but, you know,
because see, that's how young Moose Track Palin wound up in the Iraq too. You realize that, right?
Yeah, close his mouth as fast as possible.
Yeah, he got busted for what was it? Vandalizing school buses. Track Palin did. And he got that come to Jesus speech from the circuit judge who said, "Son, I'm going to put you in prison for doing what you done. It's going to be real embarrassing to you, Mama.
I'm not going to embarrass her to death.
But I'm going to give you a chance, son. You can leave this courtroom here today, and you can go straight down to the recruiter, and you can sign your bus painting ass up to the Army. Or you can go to prison. Your call, son." See, judges always say, "Son."
My biggest fear about that is, you know, if he does get killed, look at the sense of revolt. And I would hate to think that there's a mother praying for that. But that would be a guarantee win, wouldn't it?
Kind of would, and I've already been straightened out. It wasn't Michelob. It was Löwenbräu, Rick.
Yeah. Löwenbräu. Okay, I'm sorry. I couldn't remember, Mom. Patty was much better at commercials than me.
What's sad is that stupid jingle still stuck on a brain cell somewhere, and I can't remember where I got to be 2 days from now.
Long-term memory.
Oh!
Well, I do want to kind of give a little, get a little preview of what's going on tomorrow. I've stopped in the middle of doing the show, and it's going to be about the street fair at the Red Coat Republican Convention. And, you know, tune in. I kind of like this one so far.
Well, I tell you what, you've been setting the radio on fire for the last few weekends here, so I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know about that.
No, you have. You've had some dandies.
But this one here I'm proud of, so I kind of wanted to get in and give a little plug. And guys listening, I think it'll be kind of fun.
And thanks for the very kind words last week about Ben and the White Rose Society. That was damn fine, Rick. It was.
Well, it's needed, and it's something that's out there, and it needs to be done for both of y'all. Both of us. All of us.
Yeah, all of us. Exactly.
It needs to be done.
Yeah, because remember, the whole goal is that one of these days, everybody gets paid.
Yeah, but then I'd have to quit if I got paid.
Oh, now, don't be standing upon your principles or nothing. How are we ever going to get you a 24,000 square foot mansion you can live in by yourself with a cat?
Well,
like our hero, Flush.
I'm sorry, I can't do that. I won't sell my soul, Bob, with that conversation. You know, I don't believe there's a soul to begin with, and I ain't selling it.
You won't practice that fraud on the devil.
Look, my friend, I know you're loaded with people there. I'm going to leave you alone. You're doing really, really great tonight, and I'm going to get back on what I'm doing and hope I don't embarrass myself and turn out worse than what I thought.
Nah, you're doing beautiful, beautiful stuff, Rick. You honest to God are.
But all you guys hang out there. Look, there is hope. There is no there. Stalin has nothing. And if Hillary really cares about the party, she will tell her a new one. And she can do it. Obama can't. Biden really can't. I mean, he can, but you can't attack a woman.
That'd be mean.
Mindset is like this, Bob. Look at this kid. Look at this kid. But don't look at these kids. See, she gets to pick and choose.
Yeah, but what a sleazy little harridan she is. I'm still pissed off about her snide little attack on Michelle Obama. She got a lot of nerve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saucer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a cat. Saucer of milk for table paling. I've always been proud of America.
It's time for us to just give a little bit of comfort here. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people, Bob, who's not going to vote for a black man. It's just a fact of life, and they're going to use this for an excuse. Oh, she's...
But Texas is downright pissed off at Sarah Palin, aren't they?
I'm sorry?
Texas is right pissed off at her because she wouldn't stay to have her baby in Texas and make her baby an honest-to-God Texan.
Can you imagine that? Who in the name of God would ever lose a chance of having a Texan in the family?
See, even a liberal Texan. You see, what have I told you people?
You know,
out of the mouth of Rick Goodner, you just heard it.
There is one thing about us. We love our state. Now, we've had some crazy people here. We're going to get them all in the institution. Everything's going to be okay. We will get it straightened out. There are some crazy
It's just a big state, and we got a lot of crazy people, and it takes a little time.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I have hope. Everybody have hope. This woman is going to be a millstone in the end because at the convention, they have all made a horrible mistake. They over and over attacked the press. Now, a friend of mine today said, well, you know, the press is going to be really, really upset and everything. I said, well, look, friend, the fact is these people will be upset, and they'll want to go for her, but they're not going to do anything against the people who sign their check. And who signs their check? Rich people.
Absolutely.
They're going to want in.
They don't like to think of themselves as working folks, but somebody signs their check.
You better believe they do. Those six figures come from somebody.
Well, Brother Rick, you get back and you light it up and you get that microphone smoking again, and we'll all be here along about 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, all right?
Sounds wonderful.
All right.
See you later.
Bye now. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. Rick's Place comes your way 7 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night for the first time. Rolls throughout the weekend up to about noon on Monday. Brand new, fresh Billy Shears coming up for you at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday evening. Rick Smith show coming to you from Pennsylvania as well. So, you know, be there. We have a grand time in the chat room as well. And let's keep it rolling. Let's do go on to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. I was listening to your show last night, which was actually, was a repeat.
Yeah, it was Wednesday nights.
Okay. And
I was off watching the boy play football.
I see. And has anything happened yet regarding that other mountains, you know, that's going to be demolished?
They are set to start blasting on Wednesday. And I'm glad you asked because I just got an email from Reverbo asking me to repeat the contact information for Joe Manchin. They're trying desperately to get Joe Manchin to actually pretend that people in the Coal River Valley are real, live, honest-to-goodness West Virginia citizens. But so far he's told them, Preston, that he just doesn't have 5 minutes for him between now and Wednesday. Not even 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I was asked to give out the contact information so people can keep up the pressure on Joe Manchin. The toll-free number is 888, and there won't be anybody there this weekend, 888-438-2731, 888-438-2731. Email goes to governor@wvgov.org, governor@wvgov.org. And, you know, don't be afraid to send more than one email, and don't be afraid to make more than one call, because for a man who doesn't have 5 minutes for the people in the Coal River Valley, it's going to take a little leveraging to get him to pay attention.
Definitely, definitely. And who knows, maybe, you know, Democracy Now will consider this story on this mountain, or maybe Common Dreams may be open to an article. Who knows? But, yeah, hopefully they'll get the word out to the extent they need to. I understand Palin met with executives from Peabody recently in Houston.
Oh, why am I not surprised?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this discussion around her family and stuff, the right wing, you were talking about their family values and the way they have co-opted the notion, the idea of family and tradition is remarkable. And, you know, we know the names of their organizations, the, you know, Family Research Council, Tony Perkins, Focus on the Family.
American Family Association.
Yep, yep. But we don't know ours. And I'd like to suggest one, actually.
Okay.
And it's called MomsRising.org. And I found it through, I was searching for a movie called The Motherhood Manifesto, which is a sensational documentary about moms and also dads and the work they do to raise the kids and how little attention and advocacy and support they get sometimes. And so this movie's about that. And it's also about the media assault on children with all these child psychologists working for businesses to manipulate kids in all sorts of ways.
Sure.
And so
that's a heck of a thing to do with a psychology degree. Go out and
right.
But then again, there are psychiatrists, and we had the story of one a few months ago, the guy, the psychiatrist on staff at Bagram Air Force Base, who goes into the torture victims, holds a flashlight up against their eyes, uses a stethoscope on their chest, and says, you know, get back to it, boys.
Yep. Yep. There are certainly competing ideologies within fields like psychology. There are certainly right-wing psychologists. And, you know, a lot of their recommendations to patients is, never mind the world. You can't do anything about that. Don't worry yourself. So on and so forth. And then there are progressive psychologists and philosophers and all that good stuff. I actually just stumbled upon a psychologist of sorts. She's also into astrology and mythology. And her name's Carolyn Casey. And does remarkable work.
You know, she's not exactly far afield, because C.G. Jung was fascinated with all of that as well.
That's right. Newton, you know, we know him as a scientist, but he had a huge interest in astrology and all sorts of kind of esoteric things. And this astrologist quotes Jung quite a bit and a lot of other figures. And she operates a different sort of CNN, and hers is called Coyote Network News.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She is sensational. I just received an audiobook she has about making the gods work for you, and she is a masterful storyteller and teacher, and just really enjoying it.
Well, I will definitely check that out. Coyote Network News.
Yes.
Okay, that should be some fun reading over the weekend. Now, so I got to ask, now that we're a week past it, has Denver calmed down and gone back to normal and so forth?
Yeah, pretty much. Trying to think of any lingering effects. Yeah, it's kind of back to normal, and we're, you know, covering the Republican convention now and on to that. And what else? The traffic's going undisturbed. You know, that's such a huge priority all the time, but it got disrupted that weekend, and in a good way. It was interesting. They very much tried to completely make that 12,000 person march disappear in the media, but the traffic reporters had to talk about it because they were getting in the way of traffic. And So, yeah. And you had asked about Rage Against the Machine, actually, last time we spoke about what happened in Denver and their involvement in mobilizing people and inspiring them. Rage did play in St. Paul at the Target Center, almost sold out, you know, I think 10,000 people or so. And there's a great article regarding that show on Common Dreams, something about Rage Against the Machine goes off like an atom bomb in St. Paul or something like that. And you just talked about the power of that show and called it one of the concerts of the decade, actually. And they've faced a lot of oppression up there. It's been disgusting the way...
What has been done, what was done to journalists in Minneapolis, not just Amy Goodman and her production crew, but journalists in general, is an appalling stain on the civil liberties of this nation.
Yep. And also what was done to those community organizers, as Sarah Palin would say.
Yeah, that's just sickening. And that's why I pointed out what we heard from Tosh a little bit. I got it in an email, noting that Jesus Christ was a community organizer. Pontius Pilate was a governor.
There you go.
And you know what? That's a theme I'd love to see rammed home. Because I'd like to see these fundies that are so behind Sarah Palin just answer that. Because, you know, you really, there's no getting around it. I mean, Yeshua, the carpenter, the day laborer, really was a community organizer. That is where the idea of community organization came from. That is why Gandhi picked it up. That's why Dr. King picked it up.
Yep, yep, that's why the gay rights movement picked it up. And actually, I just found a book on the Vietnam War veterans movement. It was amazing, amazing what they were doing and continue to do. I learned a story, actually, Carolyn Casey mentions this in her, you know, mixed in with the astrology. She mentioned how Vietnam veterans organized to get together, go back to Vietnam, and help them rebuild their temples.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You reckon there will be any Iraqi vets going back to help rebuild mosques? Do you reckon they want us to do that? I mean, because in many ways, I think we have engendered more hatred in Iraq than perhaps we engendered in Vietnam.
Yeah, it depends on the context of the mosques and their particular politics and strategies and stuff. I think some will be open to it and some won't. But, I'm convinced there will be efforts at reconciliation from some of the troops. I think it takes place already in some ways. I was reading about some troops. They're supposed to be off on some search and harass mission, and they're just driving their pickups or their military vehicles, parking them somewhere, and just kicking back, you know, enjoying music. There are people out there listening to Rage Against the Machine, you know, and in the desert and reading Noam Chomsky. And there are others who are working in orphanages. You know, we've created a lot of orphans.
We have indeed.
But they're there, and there are some that are making efforts to help those children with coloring books. And also they'll ask for medicines or, you know, toothbrushes or whatever. So it's going on. It's going on. And I think it will grow.
I hope it grows because, you know, you can only adopt that whole, I mean, at this point, all you can do is adopt that, you know, mighty oaks from tiny acorns grow and it only takes a spark to get a fire going, that kind of thing. Because right now all we have are tiny acorns and sparks.
Yeah. Yeah. I love acorns. I actually grew up all around acorns on my street, Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania.
Sure.
Beautiful acorn trees and, I used to just roll them around, spent hours just rolling them around. And it was so much fun. Just like 5 years ago, I discovered a park here in Denver that had the same acorn trees. And I put them in my hand and I held them to my nose. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I haven't.
You know, I remember way, way back I was a kid. And this was back when schools had real libraries.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge library. I worked in the library when I was in junior high school, middle school, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, great.
And they, you know, here's a school that goes only as far as eighth grade, and they had Stalking the Wild Asparagus by Ewell Gibbons in it. And I remember checking that out, and there was this chapter on how to prepare and make palatable the otherwise nasty tasting acorn. You know, you remember Ewell Gibbons. Everybody made so light of him because of those commercials.
Yeah, I do. But
he was a profound naturalist.
That's right. I found a movie called The Naturalist about a guy in the Ozarks in Arkansas. He's doing very much Thoreau-type work with the attention to detail and the drawings of so many different animals.
But I once made, per Ewell Gibbons' recipe, I once made glacéd acorns, and you know, they weren't half bad. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Great.
How did you dredge that up out of the dim, dark mists of my poor, abused memory, Preston?
I'm not sure. I attended something called the Telluride Mushroom Festival a few years ago.
Oh, God, that must have been yummy.
It was fantastic, and they time it for the blooming of the, I think, chanterelles.
Sure.
Okay. And people like Andrew Weil speaks there, and all kinds of people talking about the nutritional, medicinal, and also spiritual and psychedelic aspects of different kinds of mushrooms around the world.
And all of it, you know, not just mushrooms, Preston, but so much of what you're mentioning, that's one of the great tragedies and shames of what goes away when a place like Coal River Mountain goes away. There's ginseng on that mountain. There's slippery elm on that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
There's morel mushrooms on that mountain. There are ramps on that mountain. And all of those things are really, honest to God, precious mountain foods. And guess what? They don't grow in a valley fill. They won't grow on that stuff. That's like if you want to go hunting morels, and that's the local mushroom of choice around here. They usually pop up long about turkey hunting time. So the guys that go out turkey hunting sometimes bring back a bag of morels, and man, that's some high eating when they do. Morels pop up, I believe, around poplars, and then nowhere else, at least in this region.
Those symbiotic relationships that
develop. Exactly.
So often they try to convince us that nature is just, you know, red in claw and red in tooth and everybody shredding each other apart. Not at all. And people like Peter Kropotkin, the anarchist philosopher, wrote that book Mutual Aid, where he studied nature for months on end and saw all kinds of cooperation and symbiosis and fascinating stuff.
And you just have to slow down long enough to take some of this stuff in. And the more we do, the more we realize of what a treasure we're here to participate in and enjoy. Preston, I've got to roll along. We're right up at the top of the hour, but good talking to you, brother.
Yeah, likewise. You bet, man.
Have a great evening, all right?
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And you'll note we didn't take a break this evening. Not one. There was no break to take. Thanks, everybody, for lighting it up the way you did. Thanks for showing to people who might be new to the horn what conversation radio really, really sounds like. Thank you. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, who keep the computers and all the audio stuff going. John's also our webmaster at headonradionetwork.com, does a marvelous job. Thank you to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who saved liberal talk on the Internet with whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They're fighting with their backs against the wall, but they're not going to stop fighting. Stand with them. Fight shoulder to shoulder with them. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.